It's time for Mac Break Weekly. What a great cast of characters we have here. Chris Breen, Andy Iannocco, and Trey Ratcliffe. We'll talk about the cougar in the house. That's mountain lion to you. And a whole lot more coming up next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 287, recorded February 21st, 2012. It's tunic time. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker who needs stock video clips, photos, illustrations, music tracks, or sound effects, check out Pond5 for instant downloads at the best prices anywhere. Pond5.com. And for 25% off this month, use the code TWIT25. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. Upgrade to a premium domain and trade in your old clunkers at MacBreak.Hover.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. I'm sorry, we have to rename it. It's now de rigueur to drop the Mac. It's Break Weekly. We're starring the daddy, the author of the 911 column in World Magazine, Chris Breen.
Oh, that's right. It's World Magazine.
It's World Magazine now. You can't use Mac anymore.
So I'm going to be having lunch at Donald's?
Hey, Chris Breen, good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
The Mac Daddy from Mac 911 and Macworld Magazine. Good to have you on
it's
board.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Joining us also, of course, all the way on the other side, Mr. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Greetings from the Eastern Time Zone.
Yes, yes.
Enjoying a nice bowl of and cheese for dinner tonight. I'm not allowed to use the noodle portion of the package.
And
I can only eat that
cheese.
Orange powder because that is the wish and the desire of Apple.
And cheese. Is it truly International Pancake Day today? Just we have to check.
It's Shrove Tuesday.
It is Shrove Tuesday.
Isn't it?
Oh.
Isn't it like Fat Tuesday or the day before the start of Lent is the day you're supposed to
eat
like have lots and lots of pancakes?
Yeah.
I went to a diner this morning and had a pancakes latticed with real maple syrup. And although this was not my ecumenical duty, I did have bacon on the side.
I am so pleased to learn this because now we can run out and get pancakes for everyone.
There you go.
But Pancake Tuesday is today. Happy Pancake Tuesday. The day preceding Ash Wednesday, the first day of Lent. So this is this your last chance to have pancakes? Is that it?
It's Fat Tuesday. So before you start making your Lenten sacrifices,
this is it.
You know, this is the period in which like every McDonald's, at least in New England, will have the Filet-O-Fish sandwich on the specials board on Friday.
Look at that. Mm. In most traditions, the day is known for the eating of pancakes before the start of Lent. Pancakes are eaten as they are made out of the main foods available, sugar, fat, flour, and eggs, whose consumption is traditionally restricted during the ritual fasting associated with Lent. So enjoy your sugar,
I believe that's in the New Testament, the letter from the Apostle Bubba to the waitress.
Yo, give me some sugar, fat, flour.
That is tamari. You're going to have more pancakes and... I shouldn't have to ask for more butter. I'm an apostle.
We have a special guest in studio. I'm really excited. Joining us, Trey Ratcliffe, the esteemed, world-renowned photographer.
Hey.
From StuckInCustoms.com. It's great to have you, Trey.
Thanks. I am a hardcore Apple fanboy and a hardcore Apple user, so I kind of have this Venn diagram, 99% overlap.
I'll tell you how hardcore he is. Not only does he have a MacBook in front of him, and a big one at that, he's got an iPad in his lap.
Yes.
Is that because?
Well, I'm riding dirty down there.
Okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
White and nerdy. That's what he said.
Right.
He is at StuckInCustoms.com. And in fact, he's going to stick around and join us for Twit Photo. I'm glad about that.
Yeah. It's an all day affair here.
And has really become, if nothing else, a master of social media for self-promotion.
Well, that sounds a bit vainglorious the way you said that.
It does. In fact, insulting is what it sounds.
Well, really, I... what I share everything I do, right? I share my photos. I share how I take them.
Right.
I share how I blog.
You give it all
away. I just give all this stuff away.
Right.
And I end up just having nice things happen.
I should just say
people come into my life. And
you are the most generous man on the internet is what I should say.
Well, I do give a ton of stuff away, but it's great, you know.
And you're doing fine. That's the beauty of it.
No, yeah.
I wish the record companies pay attention, the television company pay attention.
Yeah. No, there's uproar about Pinterest and giving stuff away and copyrights, and I say just give it away. Don't worry about the piracy, don't worry about any of that stuff. It's a new age of sharing
that
online.
Pancake eater from Zero BC said something very similar. He said, "Cast your bread upon the water and it will come back to you full of pancake syrup." Or something like that. That may not be the exact gospel.
Yeah,
but
you're off a little. Close,
somewhat close.
Yeah, you got the gist of it.
So we're going to talk. We have lots to talk about today. Anyway, good to have you. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. But Trey is also the host of Trey's Variety Hour. I forgot to mention that, which appears Monday, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, not only on Google Plus as a hangout, but also on Twitter.
Yes, on the network here.
On the network. We're really thrilled to have it. Now it's third week, and it's just a great show.
Well, thanks.
Thank you for doing it.
It's fun.
Yesterday you did the space photography with the astronaut.
We did. We had a very well-known NASA astronaut on named Ron Gran. And I don't know if you saw, there was this time-lapse that was done.
I know. It was amazing.
He did that. He just kind of came up with the idea. He goes, no one's ever done a time-lapse from space. So he just hooked up a camera, and they have Nikon D3s up there. And he just shot it, then released it. And it became this huge viral thing. It was kind of his own little personal idea.
In a way, that is, and I predict in the future, will be as seminal as that famous big blue marble shot from Gemini, I think it was, many moons ago, where it was really in some ways the first time we had seen the Earth from outside the Earth. And it really, I think for a lot of people, was a very powerful image that is often cited as, you know, this is, let's not forget, we're on a fragile blue planet. This is the first, you know, this is the same thing, but in video, and it's just
amazing. And he shared
stunning.
It out there. I think he's got over 1 million followers on Google Plus. And, you know, all photographers, we just dream of space. We dream of being an astronaut. And this guy is like living the life. And
this is actually from the ISS. So he took stills and stitched them together. And I tell you, when you get a video like this, it's just an amazing. Look at the moon there. It's just incredible. This is real. This looks like a simulation.
Yeah.
This is actually...
it looks all CG.
Yeah.
At the end of our 5.5 months.
Anyway, I won't play the whole thing, but it is on Vimeo, and it's highly recommended. Time Lapse from Space, The Journey Home by Fragile Oasis, if you want to watch that. So, we have... this is our first time gathering together since Apple announced Mountain Lion. Chris Breen, you got a briefing?
I did not get a briefing, but I have been through it.
You've been to the Mountain Lion?
I've been to the Mountain Lion, and I've read lots of things about it.
As have we all by now.
Yes.
You got a briefing, though, Andy, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Didn't get an advance briefing, but like Thursday morning, it was literally like I woke up at 8:30, checked my mail, checked to see what was on fire. Nothing's on fire. Went downstairs, microwaved a bowl of oatmeal, came back upstairs 10 minutes later, and now I've got like 50 emails. Yeah. And I've got to be ready for an Apple briefing in like 45 minutes.
I was alerted by MG Siegler saying I've been up since 5 a.m. Writing about Mountain Lion, and I thought he was joking. I thought, what? No. Apple announced without any fanfare. A week ahead, they gave briefings to people like Walt Mossberg, David Pogue, John Gruber. So they had an advanced preview. And so they were able to, at 6 a.m. Eastern, publish their reviews. And then Apple, of course, released the information.
There were no leaks at all.
It was a stunner. It was like, what? Yeah. That's why I thought it was made up. I thought we would have heard some rumor. Apple says now they're going to update OS 10. Yearly. This is part of a yearly cycle. And it feels a little like the TikTok cycle they're doing with the iPhone. And they did kind of with Leopard, Snow Leopard. Snow Leopard was a minor upgrade on Leopard. Then Lion, big upgrade. And this is Mountain Lion is kind of the Snow Leopard. Would you say that's true, Andy? Or is this a full-blown OS upgrade?
I'm not sure that I would call it really a full-blown upgrade. upgrade. There are certainly a lot of new features, but the most significant feature of them all is just the palpable shift in philosophy. Yeah. That if Lion was a nod towards, well, let's turn our attention back to the Mac OS. Let's make sure that we're giving it exactly the same amount of features and the same amount of thought as we've been giving iOS, because we've been a little bit focused on that for a couple of years. This is much more of a nod towards, no, we've decided that we need to bring the iOS experience to the desktop experience. Not only do they do simple things like saying, well, let's make sure that the address book and the calendar have the exact same names for one app or the other. That's simple. Let's bring the messages app from iOS to the Mac. Let's stop calling it iChat and having separate apps or separate things. That's also simple. But when you take a look at the fact that when they brought the Reminders app and the Notes app from iOS to the desktop, they didn't do any change whatsoever to the UI, even though not only are we talking about a desktop machine in which I've got a keyboard, I've got a mouse, I've got a big screen, but also the idea that when I'm at my desktop, I'm sitting there for 3 or 4 hours working on huge projects. On an iPad, the reason why those interfaces are so simple is not just because it's a smaller screen and you've got the simple touch interface, but because you're not sitting there for hours and hours. You really are there just to get one or two things done and then move on. So that's sort of an interesting move, I thought, that especially something like the to-do list, the Reminders app, that it's just simply one window, list, detail, boom, done, ship it.
So it sounds like you might disagree with this premise.
I'm not sure that I disagree. I disagree. If it's true, again, this is just speculation on my part. If it's true that Apple is going to bring most of the sensibility of iOS to the desktop, and I would define that as make the user experience as clean and simple and reliable as possible, even if doing so means that you limit what this operating system can accomplish, then yes, I think that's a bad idea. I think what I said in my piece last week that the problem is that they didn't really decide how to make a version of these iOS apps that would maximize the experience, because the whole success of the iPad was based on, yes, we had a mail app that looked very, very familiar to users of the existing macOS mail app, but they really thought out, well, what does it imply that people are accessing mail via a tablet device? What do we have to, what mindset are they in? So that's the reason why the iPad was successful. With Windows, they just decided, well, we'll take the exact same thing we have on Windows, just make it into a new form factor. That's why they failed. So that's why I think they made some curious choices here that I don't fully understand. I suspect that when the final thing really ships later this summer, we'll see more of the puzzle emerge. And in 2013 is when we'll really see, is Apple full bore committed to, I won't say dumbing down the Mac OS, but at least focusing it towards the iOS sort of consumer market. Let's just say it that way, because there are benefits to the iOS approach. That's when we'll really figure out what they're up to here. For now, lots of things I like about it, but my to-do list of things to worry about for the next 3 years just got another couple items added to it.
You agree, Chris?
I think what Apple is trying to present is a unified interface with the idea that regardless of whether I'm looking at this device or this device mm-hmm. or this device, mm-hmm. I'm seeing these are just windows on my data, right? So when
And that's where they will succeed with iCloud. I mean, I think the iCloud integration is very important, and that's the back end for what you just described.
Yeah, and that's ultimately what it is you're looking into the cloud, and you're either looking on a small, medium, or large screen.
But I'm with Andy that each requires a somewhat different interface, and that to unify the interface perhaps isn't the best window onto the iCloud.
I would agree with that as a longtime Mac user.
Right.
I was speaking at a users group this weekend.
That's where we're different, perhaps.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I was showing some people Launchpad the other day, and I said, I don't get the sense of this at all. I understand why it's on here.
Right.
But I have no idea why they would put it on here, because there's so many better ways to use it.
Every time I download an app from the Mac App Store, it throws it in the Launchpad. It forces me to look at Launchpad. Yeah. Fortunately, it's one keystroke away from disappearing, but I don't understand it.
The difference is that somebody raised their hand and she said, I love Launchpad. I said, okay, where did you start with this? Did you start with the iOS or did you start with the Mac? She said, I started with my iPhone. And I love it that I know exactly what's going to happen on my Mac because it's the same interface. And I think that's where Apple's going.
And in true numbers, there are far more iOS users than there are desktop users.
Indeed, they are. I mean, in the past, we would say, oh, well, the iOS is the gateway drug to the Mac. Other and now it's just around. An afterthought. It's just everybody's on iOS. And they go, okay, well, this Mac thing seems pretty cool too. And, look, I'm comfortable because here I am.
Have you played much with what's in Mountain Lion? You probably haven't put it on your system because you actually do work.
I've been watching all the coverage of this thing.
Yeah.
And, well, what's interesting to me, just kind of taking the whole tech press meta thing, looking at it, you know,
We're such different people than the normal user.
Yeah. So I went to TechMeme and I started reading about, what's coming in the new OS? And I read 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and I thought, I'll just go to the Apple website. And then they had a full video there that shows exactly everything. And then I thought, why did I just waste 15 minutes? It's different now because it's almost like we don't need the press to know what Apple is doing. I have a direct relationship with Apple, right? I feel close to Apple.
Apple loves that idea, by the way.
Go to their website and see what they have.
Like any tech company wants to disintermediate its message to the populace. It would love to talk direct.
But then what happens is, like Andy's article, which everyone should read, it's great. Andy and other tech writers, they almost become... It's almost like Apple is this super organism that's spitting out these semi-sentient devices, right? And he's like analyzing them philosophically, like Attenborough, looking at birds of paradise. Like, look how this thing behaves in the wild. Let's analyze it in a certain way. And so it's becoming a very interesting...
For a minute, I thought you were going to call him a dicky bird, sitting a symbiote sitting on the back of the Apple rhinoceros pecking off parasites. But no, I like the Richard Attenborough. It's much better. And I'm sure Andy prefers that as well.
No, I get it. I'll be compared to Attenborough all day long. Thank you.
We're glossing what Apple is delivering.
Well, what I guess this only came to me this morning as I was really thinking this over, that if there's a mistake that Apple's making here, it's in thinking that iOS is just as good at the job of being a computer as anything else that's out there. I liken it to having a two-car garage, and my iPad is the full-on plug electric car. The other car in the garage is the hybrid, the SUV vehicle that runs on gas. I love the electric car. It's modern. It's wonderful. It's where things are going, but it has a range of 70 miles, period, which means that it's fine for lots of things, but I couldn't really use it as a practical car if I did not have a really gas, a 400-mile full capacity range car that I could rely on for the stuff when I really need transportation like that. So I think that, yes, there's a generation of people who are coming into macOS from iOS, but there's still the majority of computer users that define a desktop computer, define a laptop as a machine with no limitations. It's not a boutique operating system. No matter what I want to do with this device, I can get this project done in this computer. So I would hate it if we look back 2 years from now and Apple said, no, we're okay with macOS being the boutique operating system where if you really want to get stuff done, well, you're going to have to go to Windows. But if you're okay with a subset of things, if you really only deal with maybe 10 or 20 files at a time, if you never have to have more than two or three windows open at a time and you never own more than 9 or 10 apps that you really use on a day-to-day basis, get it a Mac. It's fine. It's only you're only paying $400 extra. But it's fine. It's fine.
And I share exactly that concern. In fact, and I look at things, and it's completely reading tea leaves or criminology, but I look at things like changing the about box on Mountain Lion from saying Mac OS X to OS X. That's how that was my joke at the beginning of the show. And that is the kind of thing that does worry me. Because as Apple dropped the word computers from its corporate name, it is in a way a signal. It's not certainly – it has no functional purpose, but it has a signal saying, hey, guys, it isn't really Mac anymore. Are we going to have to change our name to Break Weekly? I mean –
But we forget that the iPhone 1.0 ran OS X.
That's what they said. I still – question.
Well, no, I've at the time I was talking to not only like executives at Apple but also engineers. It's OS X with everything that is irrelevant for a phone ripped out and new stuff.
Is that still the case with iOS, would you say?
I believe it's. I have not heard or been told anything that would contradict that. Okay. I mean, now we're talking about a core kernel. We're talking about the idea of two buildings being built on the same foundations. You then turn one into a pool house. You turn another into a four-story abode. But the principle is basically the same. So maybe all they're simply doing is saying, well, part of Apple's personality and strength is that they always underscore the compatibility of all their devices. That they're developing a big ball of ideas. As a big ball of features that they can then articulate and implement in all kinds of different devices. So it's very consistent on that basis for them to say, let's underscore the fact that all of our devices are running the same core operating system, and then we build it out differently depending on what kind of device this user wants to use.
Well, let's go one by one, if you don't mind, through the new features so we could talk a little bit about it. Just and I know that everybody like Trey has already kind of looked at the Apple site and read all the articles, so I don't want to rehash anything. But what I'd like to do is get your thoughts on these features. Let's start with Gatekeeper, which is a significant feature. This is a security update to OS X that I think is certainly going to put it way ahead of any other operating system in terms of pure security, but does raise some questions. So one of the features of Gatekeeper is the user has three choices about apps. Mm-hmm. You can actually, there's a setting on the Mac that says I will only allow apps from the App Store.
Right.
There's a middle ground that says I will only allow apps that are signed by Apple, whether from the App Store or elsewhere. And a third setting that is kind of the like come and get me hacker setting, which is anywhere, anytime, which is actually how it is right now on a Macintosh.
Right.
Is that a signal? Is that the first? Is that the camel's nose under the tent? Beginning of Apple moving people away from third-party distribution?
I was a little concerned about it when I first heard about Gatekeeper, but then when I saw the flexibility that's built in, and then also some reports from developers who've spoken with Apple, and Apple has said, no, really, we like third-party developers. We want you to keep developing for us. We don't need you to be in the App Store, because there are clearly things that can't be in there that talk to certain elements of the operating system that the App Store won't allow. And those utilities can't go away. We need them. They're vital utilities.
You can't do demos. You can't do betas.
Right.
You can't do open source, some say, because the license agreement is at odds with the GPL.
Right.
And so we certainly want those.
And they can't kill open source. I mean, it would just be tragic if Apple were to just say, I'm sorry, no open source for you anymore. You have to go to the App Store. It would upset a lot of long-time
Do we know what the default setting will be when Mountain Lion ships? They
I think
haven't
it's the
said.
Middle setting. Is it?
Yeah,
is that
the middle
right,
setting
Andy?
Is the default. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that seems like a good setting, actually, because it will give you a lot of the security of only having it in the App Store, right. Because presumably a hacker is not going to take the trouble of going to Apple and saying, hey, I'd like a certificate, please.
Yeah.
And if he does, we'll get him.
Yeah, I do think Gatekeeper is a really positive step, especially because of this middle setting that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Apple is giving developers, we will give you so much of the benefits that consumers want about being able to trust the apps that they download. And the idea that this certification, it's not even an app certification. Apple will not even look at the content of this app. So long as you've proven, as a developer, so long as you've proven your identity to Apple so that there's a way that we can trace back any nasty piece of software to the source, that's all they care about. And at that point, you're free to do pretty much whatever you want. Now, there are a couple of technical interestingness things, bits, where one of the things that Gatekeeper looks for is to make sure that the app as presented has not been modified in any way, so that if, let's say, a third party comes in and decides to inject code into Microsoft Word so that it does nasty things to protect against that, that's very, very sensible. But some developers were talking to me about how they have certain features of their software that rely, for instance, on compiled Apple scripts to tell, so that they're essentially modifying their own codes to get certain features enabled, and they don't know yet if those features will still work under Gatekeeper certification, or if they're going to have to find another way around it, or if they're going to have to go without certification of any kind. But on the whole, yeah, they've been talking to developers for a long time about this. I really think that this is a way to, you talk about the camel's nose under the tent, I really think this is an attempt by Apple to get more developers into the tent, because if you can't develop an app under the App Store guidelines, Apple at least wants to give you certain features and certain enhancements that you can easily implement and can easily deal with. So that's a good step, I think.
And how is this tied, Chris, to the requirement Apple announced a few months ago that developers request permissions for their app and, you know, check those boxes in the manifest saying, well, I'm going to need to be able to read a file, mm-hmm. write a file. Is that tied to Gatekeeper, or is that a separate?
I believe that's a separate thing. It's all part of their sandboxing effort. I think at one time Apple was saying, you know, everything has to run like on the iOS in its own little container. You may not talk to other things, and developers went nuts.
We got to write to the file system.
Right, we have to go to the file system.
Sorry.
We need to talk to other applications because clearly Apple, your software does that, so we should be allowed to do the same thing. So I think this was Apple's effort to say, oh, okay, tell us what you need,
and we'll
mark it off on the menu, and we'll see about that.
And presumably that sets up a structure for Apple to notify the user. These are the permissions that this just as Android does right now, Apple does not do on iOS.
Right.
This is what the application wants to do, is that you should know.
Yeah, but I have to wonder what level situation they're going to do that. I mean, my mother, if she gets a notice saying, yeah, wants to do this, right, and this, she's going to go, I have no idea what that is.
I also am a little concerned. You know, certainly this will make it much more secure. There's no question about that. And sandboxing is a good thing. But Apple has also built into Mountain Lion this new feature called Sheets, which is very much like the sharing capability in iOS, where you can't actually pass, you can't save to the file system, right, and then open an arbitrary program can open it from a file system. So I use, let's say, Pages to create a word processing document, save it, and then I open it with another application, say Preview. You can't do that in iOS. You have to open, you know, save into that app from the original app, and that capability is going to be in Mountain Lion. And I they're not enforcing it, but I'm wondering if that's a first step towards eliminating a file system.
Oh, I hope not. I mean, because they do it on iOS, and you have to use it you know, as somebody coming from the Mac, I don't want to do that. I would love it if I could have this app talk to that app and not have to say, no, actually, I want you to open in over here.
There's some advantage, Trey, in your workflow. For instance, you use Photoshop and Photomatics, and the ability to say, send this to Photoshop via, you know, that's a nice workflow.
Well, but I think that's why I use Bridge, and I use so many tools. But I think there's, you know, so many different kinds of Apple users nowadays. There's a lot of just consumers where Sheets are just fine.
I want you to represent the pro user, because that's really what you
as
are.
As a pro, someone that creates a lot, not just a light creative person that occasionally does a document or something, but like as a serious creative person, right, you've got to have access to a massive file structure. I don't see that going away, because you have temporary files, you have permanent files, you have movie files over here, you've got source files, and you need to keep this orchestra of digital files both in your head and on your computer, because it's the creative person that then uses these tools to synthesize into something final.
That's your artist's palette. That's
right.
A little cyan, you know. That's,
right, it's my Bob Ross palette, you know, and I don't just want a little color picker. I need the full palette.
Is there anywhere in your brain a little tiny smidgen of fear that Apple doesn't really care about pro users? I mean, I look at what they're doing with Final Cut, which is essentially moving it to the App Store, making it an app. I look at how they're treating pro users kind of in general. Does there a smidgen of worry?
No, not really, because the people at Apple themselves are very creative, and they're also using a robust file structure. Yeah. They're doing a lot of programming. They're synthesizing many different digital files together, so they understand the computer as a workhorse to create something big. They understand the truck thing, and they are also want to build better trucks for themselves, because you know, they don't want to use this, you know, little MacBook Air to develop the next OS or to develop the next version of Aperture, or you know,
are you making fun of my Air?
No, I think it's very delicate and light.
Andy, you agree that this is interesting, that the inside Apple, there would be a rebellion if Apple abandoned the pro user.
I would agree with that, because they eat their own dog food, they use their own tools, and they would never deny permissions to the outside world that they don't rely on themselves. I know of one manager inside of Apple that has ensured the survivability of his product by making sure that he cares about the needs of the consumer, but he also realizes that the more he can help coworkers at Apple rely and use his product every single day, the harder it's going to be for any manager inside Apple to kill his product. Because no, we can't lose this product, because I use it every day to get my schedules done. And, but really, it is a question of how do you want to define a computer? I mean, it's easy to say that it's okay to drop, for instance, the Mac Pro line, because for God's sakes, we got so much of what almost everybody would want a Mac Pro for is now a core feature of the iMac. We can lose that.
It's and maybe the that almost is, everybody that makes me nervous. That almost, right?
Well, see, also, because it's not just there's this mythical,
because we're almost
Asgardian user who has the golden shield and the Uru hammer that moves mountains with their Mac. But there are also the people who 80% of the time, basic iOS features will work just fine, but then there are these little instances in which they want to do something that they see happening every single day on Windows, but they can't do it here because that's been sandboxed out, or because there's a limitation. One of the things I singled out was sharing sheets is a really cool idea. on the desktop because it's so useful on iOS. But I wish that it were as useful as Windows 8 on the tablet that I have upstairs. In that, so many times, like I'll do a screenshot or I'll import an image and I want to edit it in Photoshop or any other app, and I always have to do a save as in this right. thing, tab over to the new. Open up or do a copy and paste, and there are at least three or four steps to get that in. In Windows 8, I can simply be in my camera capture app or my Twitter app where I'm just looking at this picture and say, please send this directly into Photoshop Express. Right. And then suddenly I have a new document in Photoshop Express where that thing is ready for editing. That's cool. That's like two right. taps for things I want to do. So I would hate to, if Apple doesn't do that because they couldn't imagine it, that's one thing. If you can't do that on an Apple, on a Mac because Apple decided that apps cannot communicate that way, that's a pro feature that people are not really going to be interested in using. Oh, man, that's bad.
Let me make a proposition and see what you guys think. I think it is possible for Apple to create, and certainly Apple's messaging is aimed at consumers. It's aimed at the vast 98%. To create a desktop operating system that is as comfortable, as easy, as friendly as iOS is comports itself as iOS so that it's a very easy move and still preserves all the I know that I am in the 1%. I like Automator. I like the services menu. Mm-hmm. I like watch folders. Is it possible? It might be my proposition that Apple, in their messaging, is not. Maybe they're going to wink and nudge at the pro user like Trey, but most of the time they're going to message consumers. But deep down, they're going to continue to preserve those pro features forever and ever. Does that seem doable?
It doesn't seem to cost them anything more to keep those kind of features.
And
that
there's
are there
a
already.
Huge benefit to do
yeah.
so.
They can put a sheen over the top right. for people like my parents who have awful messy desktops and can never find.
They don't
anything
want a desktop. It drives my Jennifer crazy when every once in a while she's now using an iPad, but when she was still using a notebook. She'd have 40 windows open and never close an app. And I closed all the apps in the windows. She said, what's that under there? I said, well, that's the desktop. What are all those? Those are icons. She doesn't want that. She's much happier on iOS. Yeah. Yeah. And she's the 99%.
Yeah, that's why I think that – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Trey. I'm sorry.
That's just the big part of the market, right?
Right.
They have to do that.
It's a sweet spot, too.
It's a sweet spot. And, I don't think they're going to abandon us. I have faith in Apple.
And I also think Apple has a real advantage that no other company has. I'm not just talking about the $100 billion either. The fact that they do, if they were ever tempted to say, well, we need to dumb down the Mac OS because consumers want something simpler, they still do have, they can send a clear message that says that there are people who just want to attend to the 5 hours of computing, and let's assume that email and the web and office and photo editing and chat all start with the letter R. I'm regretting that choice almost the minute that I said that at the start of the sentence. If people just want a basic machine that does just those functions, great. We have this thing called iOS. We have this thing called the iPad. It'll work just great. We can even sell you a $50, a $60 keyboard that will be just as good as the keyboard you type on every day. You don't even need it. Whereas if people who have a more conventional 8-hour day sitting at a desk getting stuff done operation, and this does not necessarily define the pro user, defines the people who just has a job to do and right. just needs to get it done efficiently, we have the Mac OS. So that's why I really hope that they were to, although it makes sense for them to cause some features to cross over, it makes sense for them to have a consistent interface from one to the other. It's also just as useful and just as profitable to make sure there is that clear line between these two products.
You agree, Chris?
I do. Yeah. I think that to pull out the rug from under pro users would be a horrendous mistake. And as Andy, I think, observes, and Trey as well, Apple employees are pro users.
Right.
I deal with the people in the music area a lot with Logic, and they can't take that stuff away. They have a serious investment in that technology. A lot of people are using it now. And the same with Final Cut, even though a lot of the pro users are upset about Final Cut Pro X. Given the improvements that they've made in the last iteration, you can see that they're trying instead of just saying, forget it. We're just not interested. Now it's prosumer.
And in fact, they've always had things like Simple Finder. But the problem with Simple Finder is you had either or. You couldn't be a pro user and use Simple Finder. So I kind of I hope that they can do this and give Andy his sheets and his file system.
Well, I think what we would really like is, and it will never ever happen, but for the 1%, they'd have a pro switch. in system preferences where you just know, and you have to sign an oath that says and a certificate and register with them and say, actually, I do know what I'm doing. Thank you very much. Flip it on, and suddenly all this stuff comes back. You lose that funky looking calendar interface and an address book, and everything is in stark gray.
I hate that. What do they call that? Neurocatonic or whatever it is, the, where you get stitching and all that crap.
Oh, that's called tuck and roll.
I hate it. But I guess we're going to get it. You're right. The Pro Switch should turn that off, shouldn't it?
It should. Yeah, it should. Really, I mean, what they want to do is you kind of bring it back down to like
skeuomorphic. Tiger. Thank you, Radio.
Well, see, actually, I mean, Apple kind of already has that here. If they could, it wouldn't be so, it seems thematically so easy to have, given that they're highlighting the need to have full screen versions of apps, what if there were a way to simply tell the Mac, by the way, I'm a low impact user, please by default just boot up and give me into Launchpad. When you launch apps, put me into full screen mode. To do as much as you can to remove as much clutter as can. Make that an option and not simply the way that you have to adjust yourself for working with a Mac.
Right, because you can go back to, you can turn off most of these settings, and that was what Apple was saying to Lion users who were upset. They said, you can just turn all these things off, but then you have to spend half an hour finding out where they are to turn them off, and it would be great to have just the big red switch. It's like,
there's an opportunity for a third-party developer. I think the next version of Onyx should have a pro button.
A pro button and just flip all this stuff off.
Yeah, except we just talked, we're talking about an app that talks to and controls other apps. And
not allowed. Not allowed.
By the way, I do not like this new Mountain Lion logo. It reminds me of a vindictive old girlfriend.
She doesn't look happy.
No, she's like, install me.
Yeah. Now, I think we could recontextualize this for you, Trey. I think that is a sultry
cougar.
Look. She's a cougar. She's saying, hey, big boy, I like you. I hope you like mountain lions.
I don't know.
No?
No.
That didn't help?
No, that made it more creepy.
Come here, Trey. Look into my eyes. I'm about to eat you.
I didn't realize that you were living in such a desperate housewife.
Look, Trey. Follow my eyes. Look into my eyes. Deeper, Trey. Deeper. Come closer.
Leo's just sick and tired of having all these housewives staring at his butt every time he does food shopping.
I tell you, I could tell you.
He's not just a piece of meat.
Isn't it time for an ad?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Here, kitty. You've heard that there's a thesis I think is brilliant, before we go into this ad. Mm. Who is it that's doing the research into this parasite that's toxoplasmosis comes from it. It comes from handling cat litter. And it is a parasite that has a very interesting cycle. It is born into, or it is carried by the cat, big cats and small, but requires a host to breed. And so what happens is the cats poop it out, something eats it, and then the cat eats the thing that ate it. So then this has gone on. This is actually a fascinating parasitic story. There's a guy who has the thesis that these parasites, because they get into human brains from toxoplasmosis, is a human, we can be carriers of this parasite. And that he believes that it's the reason that some people are risk takers. There is a whole behavioral change that occurs in the brain neurologically from the presence of this parasite. I'll see if I can find this research. It's fascinating.
It makes them think different?
It makes them think different. And
are you saying that Steve Jobs ate cat poop?
I don't know. I'm just saying that from this tech, you don't have to eat it. If you clean a kitty litter, you can get it. And it's actually it's a serious thing that people do have. It's not a good thing to get it. But the thesis is that this is why there are cat ladies, that this is why people take risks, because the parasite in your brain has one goal, to get you eaten by a cat.
Really?
Because it cannot continue its cycle.
Ah.
And so in order for its breeding cycle to continue, the cat has to poop it out, you have to eat it, it breeds in your brain, and the cat has to eat you so that it can continue the cycle. Ah. Look at this parasite has been with us for millions of years. It's working, just got to say.
So you're saying that OS 11 is going to be codenamed Flatworm?
Closer, Trey. Closer. Look into my eyes. Trey.
Some days I'm actually afraid to open my inbox to find out which of my friends have been eaten by cats today.
Well, it doesn't. It apparently no longer works, but the parasite doesn't know that because it's, you know, it's just pure biology. I'm going to look this up while we talk a little bit about a brand new advertiser. Can I introduce you to somebody brand new? And Trey, you're going to be interested in this. Everybody who is a professional, a creative, should go to POND and the number 5.com right now. The world's stock media marketplace. I know many of you create presentations, videos. You do. If you're a blogger, you should know about this. If you do apps, any kind of media, you should know about POND 5. Because let's face it, we're not all brilliant designers, and yet there are some wonderful people like Trey out there who design, who do amazing video, who do illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, After Effects projects, all on POND 5 for its royalty-free stock video, sound effects, music, After Effects photos, and illustrations. And it is truly, look at the number here, 982,000 video clips, 14,000 uploaded this week, 7.6 million photos, 680,000 illustrations, 102,000 music tracks. I'm going to turn my son onto this. Great place to sell his music. 211,000 sound effects. Incredible place to get the materials you need. They make it very easy if you go to pond5.com to search. They've got this great tag cloud. They've got bins and so forth. It's very nicely structured. Video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects. At POND 5, you can get an establishing video shot of Albuquerque. I know we all need one. Or maybe a time lapse of the Tokyo skyline. We got to have that.
Why not?
An aerial view of L.A. Audio of a ticking bomb or a music background for your next viral video so you don't get pulled down off YouTube. Images of palm trees, penguins, and pandas. It's all there at POND5.com. So here's the deal for you. If you're looking for media, if you go to POND 5 and figure out what you want, 25% off your purchase this month when you use the TWIT code TWIT25. Not MacBreak. It's TWIT, T-W-I-T, and the number 2 and the number 5, 25% off. And for artists, you might consider this. You get to set your own price and receive industry-leading royalties on every sale. You're going to make the best money ever from this, and you set your own price, so you get to determine how much you make. This is something for media makers I think you should check out as well. POND 5. These guys, I think, are lesser known than some of the other, like you were mentioning, the G word.
Getty.
Yeah.
I am not a fan.
No.
Getty.
No, these guys... By artists, for artists, and yeah. I think this is really certainly worth checking out.
They have a nice selection there.
They really do. Look at all the cassette labels you can get. POND 5, the world's stock media marketplace, brand new. We welcome them to MacBreak Weekly. They came to you because they know you are creators, and this is a great place for you as well. License once, use forever, wherever, whenever. You never have to worry about repeating royalties. And don't forget to use the offer code TWIT25 to save yourself 25%. Let's talk about iCloud. That's the chat room is saying, are you going to talk about iCloud? Are you going to talk about iCloud? I think this is the biggest success, at least in my mind, of Mountain Lion, is finally the integration into iCloud. Maybe make iCloud useful.
Putting documents there instead of having to...
And it's automatic.
Yeah, from the Mac is a great idea because... We thought that was going to happen in Lion.
It I seemed did too.
Like, yeah, we're going to get.
They said that, didn't they?
They kind of said that, and then it turns out you could do it by messing around with folders and things, but it never worked very well. And Apple said we don't officially support this. So now the idea, and again, I think that goes back to the single window into your data, is that when you open a save dialog box, you have the option now to go directly to iCloud.
Is it just a check mark?
I think it. I believe it's just. I think it's part of a split screen that you
it's two choices, one or the other.
The other thing I like is that if you modify that document now on your iPhone or iPad, it's automatically updated, right. Not just in the cloud, but even if you have like pages open on your desktop and then you work on the document here, you can watch the changes happen on your desktop.
As you can with things like PhotoStream.
Instantly,
and with I mean, that's what we've already seen this working in other places,
right.
When it works properly, and that's
right.
Notes and mail and that sort of thing. But now if it actually works with documents, my concern is about the size of the documents, is how Yes, you can do this.
So
with
you
maybe
get
some
five gigs. How quickly do we go through 5 gigs? Is that the question?
Yeah, because if you're using something other than say a Pages document or a Numbers document, I mean even keynote presentations, if you really pack them with media, can get pretty big.
Yeah, that's a good point. 5 gigs. It could be 5 speeches and I'd be done.
Right. And yeah. I mean, that's fine if I want to work with iWork all the time, but I use a lot of other applications and some of them produce large documents. So.
But I think this is one area in which Apple is specifically saying that this isn't a feature for every single document you ever use or you ever own. It really is for the stuff that you're using this
right
week.
Now. It's what I'm working on today.
And that's really not, I don't think that's a dumbing down of anything. I just think that there's a way that you have to rationally manage a cloud storage system like this. You can either have a system like Dropbox where you are not improving it beyond just simply having a folder of attached network storage that's shared between multiple devices. If you really want something that is as great as documents in the cloud, and I'm with you guys. It's when I first got it up and running last year, I would just have no joke. I would have like the iPhone like copy of Pages on a little stand, just so that as I'm typing and on the iPad, when I take my hands off the keyboard, I look over to the iPhone and I see this little dog ear appear in the document on the iPhone. It's like, oh, it's updating! Yay! That's so cool.
Well, here's a cool thing.
Do you use PhotoStream Tray at all, or do you turn that off?
I don't use that. But here's an unexpected thing about iCloud that we discovered. So I'm also a developer, right? We make apps. And
the Stuck in Customs app is incredible, and you've got this new app on the iPad.
Stuck on Earth. Yes, so I don't mind plugging that because it's a free app.
Oh, it's wonderful.
No ads or anything.
Love it.
So Stuck on Earth, this was interesting because it's an iPad app right now, right? And it got rejected last time we submitted because you can make your own trips, and you save trips. We used to save them to the iPad. And they rejected it. They said, no, you have to save stuff to the cloud now. And I was a little bit annoyed. I thought, oh, well, why does it matter? You know, why? But now that the iCloud is going everywhere, we are taking our app and we're making a Mac version of it, right? And so now your
trip that
you create on your iPad, you can also pull it into the Mac app. And the Mac app, we could do so much more with.
Right.
So we have an iPhone, iPad, and Mac app, and there's more and more functionality as you go up the food chain, but they have access to the same document layer. And that's really, really cool from a developer standpoint and from a user standpoint.
I think there was also an issue, I may be wrong on this, but there because they save to clean up in iOS 5, they would clean up cache where people were saving data in the cache, and you would lose data. I think I remember the people were starting to lose data that they had thought they had saved on their iPad because there wasn't really a place to save it. There's like two places. There's a temporary place and a cache. And so I think that's also a response to the fact that, hey, by the way, we're not going to guarantee your data stays, so you better save it in the cloud because we're making room on the iPad now. But I agree. That's great. Now you've got round-tripping kind of just built in.
And it gives us a lot more ideas, right? Because before, you're just kind of dealing with this one unit, right? And if you have a good app, it's a good app on every device, and it allowed developers to be very creative and add more and more functionality, and it just makes sense, right? As you know, Apple puts things into place, and then developers can get very creative about how to use these new tools and new capabilities, and I think that this is just the beginning. We're going to see some really cool developers do some awesome
stuff. That's interesting. That's a very interesting perspective.
Yeah, iCloud really is like an element that's in the atmosphere. It's not a feature. It's just something that will cause certain organisms to grow in new and unexpected ways. We touched a second about the problems of sandboxing earlier. And there are a lot of developers who are really up in air because sandboxing really does define what an app can do and how it can behave. And that is a legitimate problem, especially when you're dealing with an app that's 5, 6, 7, sometimes 10, sometimes 15 years old. And it's always trusted the ability to do pretty much whatever it wants or behave in a way that has always worked fine in previous versions of the Mac OS. But the flip side of that is that if you are just getting into Mac development or iOS development, you're starting from zero, you're rewriting from scratch. I mean, Trey's right. You have so many resources that really enable so many features that just 3 years ago would have been, well, that would be a cool idea to have just esoteric syncing of anything across any platform, but we really don't want to spend 8 months and God knows how much money implementing this. Now it's just simply, okay, we'll just read this document that teaches us how to use iCloud, and now we can pretty much do whatever we want.
Messages is here, and you can use it if you are using Lion. You have to be using Lion. You can download the beta. Although, if you others, I guess one of the Mac sites, probably Mac Rumors, has looked into the strings and the resources, and it does say you can't use this anymore because you haven't upgraded to Mountain Lion. Yeah. So you get the beta until Mountain Lion comes out.
I was told that explicitly.
Yeah. Okay. So we know. I like it. It's cross-platform. It's kind of like iCloud in the sense that you can have your messages delivered to all your devices, iPad, iPhone, and desktop. It's and as people are now immediately. By the way, if you message me, just beware your phone number or email address will be seen on the screen.
Do you want me to show your? I was worried about.
I don't think there's anything too personal here.
Okay. I was just being careful.
Thank you for being careful, Eileen.
I don't know. I mean, I just.
No, you never know. What,
I was just going to play the little magic.
But I like. I actually, I kind of like this. It has built-in video, so I can, you know, if for instance, this person is a FaceTime user, so I see a little camera showing up, which means I can FaceTime him directly from the app. I think it's pretty cool. Now, I know you're a big Google Hangouts user, Trey, and love Google Hangouts. This is clearly aimed directly at Google Hangouts,
well,
I would say.
You can't quite do the casual asynchronous video chat,
right,
which really Google Hangouts brought to the world, right? Because Skype is always, it's back
one
and
on
forth,
one,
right? If you say something, you expect the other person to say something. But
right.
Google Hangouts is the invention is it's the first asynchronous video chat where it's just people sitting around a coffee table. So this doesn't quite get there.
Right.
All chat is asynchronous, but it doesn't get that video element quite yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not a competitor.
No, I don't think so.
But it is clear that Apple wants FaceTime to succeed, and this is part of kind of an overall strategy promoting FaceTime, I think.
Yeah, well, like a lot of Mountain Lion, they're finally starting to put
integrate
in the proper place.
Yeah.
I mean, now we have Notes in its own app, and we have and to-dos are in a proper place instead of sort of being sandwiched into Mail.
Right.
What I like about Messages particularly is I know my wife, because of the way we get our cell reception or don't, she can't message from the house.
Right.
So she has to wait till she goes out, and then there's this backlog of 20 messages that happened 3 days ago, and now they're not important anymore. But having that on her Mac where she can just bang back and forth between her Mac and her friends is really helpful. I mean, with that iChat, you could do SMS messaging kind of, sort of, but have to actually have this built in now is great. Plus, it's going to save money on her message plan.
I like that, and I love the integration of SMS with a Wi-Fi based messaging system is actually a great way to do it, I think.
Yeah, well, I think this. I'm not sure this is entirely the end of SMS, but it certainly gives it a kick in the pants.
It's amazing that they got the carriers to agree to this because it really undermines their whole, you know, $1,500 a megabyte.
Well, I think when you go to the carriers and say, this could go away any second.
Okay. We want it. No, don't take it away.
We are sorry to have offended your pricing structure. We desire to never so offend you again.
No. I didn't mean it, Apple. Really.
Good luck selling those Palm Pre's.
Yeah. Let's see, what other features should... I don't want to give short shrift to Mountain Lion, but there are some other stories. There's so much... We could do a 5-hour, 10-hour show on Mountain Lion alone. Anything that we've left out? I think we've covered kind of most of what Mountain Lion does. I do like it that reminders now have their own... Oh, Eileen is telling me that AirPlay mirroring is...
Oh, right.
Actually, it's more than just that. It's also gaming, which is kind of cool. Now is all unified in...
Game Center
is there, so you can play a game against somebody on your Mac, against somebody on an iPad, and then put it up on your big screen TV using AirPlay mirroring.
Well, I think AirPlay mirroring is particularly important.
So we've had that in the iPad, right?
Right, but if you can do this with your Mac, and I'm doing a presentation with an Apple TV on the desk, and I can do that wirelessly.
That's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
So every business in the world is going to buy an Apple TV for their conference room?
I think that they're going to sell a lot of Apple TVs because of Mountain Lion.
Or, if the rumors are true, since apparently they're not restocking Apple TVs, March 7th, Apple may announce a new iPad and something, either a new Apple TV or an Apple television, which would be very interesting.
See, given that AirPlay from Mac OS only works, I'm sorry, on OS X, only works at 720p resolution, I really think that's a pretty clear nod that we're getting a new version of the Apple TV that supports full resolution.
1080p. So we need 1080p.
They would not be downsampling the Mac experience or downsample the hypothetical rumored iPad 3 with its large display unless they were going to be beefing up the Apple TVs.
Does Stuck on Earth do AirPlay?
The next version will.
Yeah.
The secret version I have here does AirPlay.
Because I think every app now it has to have that. And every desktop app now has to start building. I presume that's something you turn on in a desktop app.
Yeah.
Or is it operating system level?
Well, no, it's system wide. It's a little dingus inside the menu that's
awesome.
Just like choosing a display. Although it is interesting that given the granularity that certain apps have chosen for supporting AirPlay on the iPad, if these content providers like the HBO Go web app, if they're going to be really, really happy that it's so easy to mirror a display from macOS to a TV set, and that they won't have, it's a system-wide thing, they won't have control of either supporting that feature or not supporting that feature. I was trying to figure out, for instance, whether or not DVD player would have a limitation where you're not allowed to stream via AirPlay, but there seems to be no reason why it should.
Well, yeah, yes, there is. Because content providers don't, don't like that at all.
Right, because classically, it's the one counterexample to so much of what Apple does. It is the one app, for instance, in which you can't use the built-in screen capture utility grab 1/24th of a second
in
a two-hour movie, because that's a copyright violation.
Shocking, yeah.
And that has to do with like the license. To get a certified version of the code for the DVD player, they have to agree that they're going to lock it down. Although, again, I have not seen anything to indicate that the DVD player would not work via AirPlay mirroring, although a lot can happen between now and September.
Right.
Well, because they can lock down apps, and as they have done, I think Hulu Plus is locked down on here, so you can't use AirPlay with it. HBO Go, you can't. You can jailbreak and use Display Out to do it.
Right.
But I can't
speak definitively. I can only speak to people I've talked to who have worked a lot with this and things that I've seen on the way the technology works. Whereas AirPlay is a feature that has to be supported by individual apps and iOS, with the way that Apple seems to have implemented AirPlay here, it's kind of like being able to say that, no, you're not allowed to use HDMI out, you're not allowed to use VGA out on this device. A lot of things can happen between now and then. And again, I'm saying that I'm not the Jedi master of video out or this particular technology. I'm saying that I've asked this question of people that are smarter than I am on this point, and they've said that they've seen nothing that would preclude it from working, or at least as things are right now.
That would be great.
Protected iTunes content will work just fine. That's controlled by Apple, so that's a dead cert.
I guess it is worth underscoring that this is a pre-release version of Mountain Lion, and things can change, and we're looking at a beta, basically, for developers only. Are we? I'm not going to ask that question. I was going to say, is anybody violating an NDA? if you're a developer, can we not talk about it? But you're press, and so you were briefed, so you could talk about it.
Such a good boy.
Mystery to me. Nobody, I signed nothing. So I'm just going to repeat what others say.
I am not under NDA on this subject, so I can speak freely.
We're going to talk some more. There are other stories. In fact, I really want to talk about the next iPad, but I just wanted to show. We're going to take a break, and as long as we're breaking, can we show Stuck on Earth?
Sure.
Now you have the special new version, but give me the audio on this, and turn up the audio on this auxiliary. Out because there Trey told me that when I signed into Stuck on Earth with my name Leo, right?
Yes.
That there would be a special message just for me?
Well, in a way.
It's an Easter egg?
Hello, Leo.
So she says thousands of people's names. You don't really have a top 1,000
name. I thought it
was
just me.
So we kind of stuck it in there.
So you mean my name wasn't in the top 1,000, so you gave me a name?
Yes. Yes, we snuck you in there.
So here's the question. Am I a daydreamer, explorer, photographer? I'm all three, baby. So that will give me a...
There is so much to this world.
It's all custom.
Our minds and bodies can travel near and far to discover, to dream.
You should find out.
The
name
world
is, Karen
is yours to explore.
Karen. Yeah.
She's very good.
Into whatever area you like.
She's a well-known
to find
voiceover
the most
artist,
amazing places on Earth to experience.
Thank you.
You are now looking at the featured photos filter, which has millions of amazing pins as you zoom in.
Now let me ask you, Trey.
Click on any photo to see it full screen.
If the mountain lion sounded like that, would you feel threatened by that?
Well, maybe you could use it late at night when you're having some alone time.
Hello, Trey.
I noticed Cinemax after 11 p.m.
You haven't been cleaning the kitty litter very often. Is there something you're afraid of? So this is fun. So you get images that tie into this. Boy, that's a, these are they all yours? No,
no,
this
no,
is
no.
Patrick
we
Smith
have,
took this.
We have millions of images from around the world,
wow.
And everything is geolocated, so you can go find these amazing places. Like I want to take that photo. Where do you stand to take that photo? Because a lot
like
of people are
idea.
Collectors, right?
I like that idea.
And so,
how do I get to be a good enough photographer to take that photo?
Nah, that's up to you. That's your own personal El Guapo you have to fight.
Nothing like that in there, huh?
No, afraid not.
This is gorgeous. Stuck on it, and it's free.
It's free.
Why, Trey? Why? I have to ask
well,
you.
Well, we have a lot of other apps.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
And the other apps are paid, and they're doing very, very well. We have a great iPad app called 100 Cameras in One.
Love that.
And, they're all profitable and doing fine. So this is kind of like my gift back to the world, to photographers, to explorers, to travelers. Because, you know, I spend so much of my time traveling, and it's so hard to find the most awesome places to go, right? You can use a combination of websites and apps and this sort of stuff to find your way around. But you just don't have much time, right? You don't want to go down to the local postcard shop.
This is the one your mother got mad at you for.
Yeah, she wasn't happy.
He was standing in traffic.
Right.
For how long, too? I mean, that's not just like run out, take a picture, and leave. You had to stand there.
For a little while.
And I could tell it's not on a tripod. You're actually squatting down.
No, I was on a tripod, but very low.
A short
to the
tripod.
Ground.
Yeah. It's like a gorilla pod.
I had it collapsed. And this is sort of an example of, you know, you can.
Of stupidity?
No, you can save
you've
trips.
You've been eating cat poop, I could tell. You're taking risks.
I might have that parasite.
Yeah.
Yeah, so all
no,
this
that's
stuff.
Beautiful. Hello, Trey. Gee, Trey, you're looking mighty handsome.
Is that Karen?
Today, yeah.
Yeah,
it's me.
Hello,
it's Karen. love these. I love these shots. So, that's one of my favorite spots.
Oh, yes.
Saint-Sulpice.
Yeah, there's a church on top of a church, and that's the one underneath.
That's
it.
the below church.
Yeah.
Is that what I thought it is? Maybe it is. It is.
Saint-Chapelle.
Saint-Chapelle, I mean. Yeah. Saint-Chapelle. Everybody goes see Notre Dame, and it's next door, and they miss this one because it's inside.
Right, no one
like
knows
the Ministry
about it.
Of Silly Walks, and you have to go in there, and you don't. And it's just one of the most beautiful churches. In
sort of a secret spot.
Yeah, not that secret.
Well, but, you know, actually, most people go to Paris. They don't even know about this
Saint-Chapelle, if you go to see Notre Dame, two blocks away.
Yeah. This There's another amazing. Secret spot right here. Yeah. This is
The Colosseum's in Paris? Oh.
Where is
that?
This is sort of this Jules Verne-esque museum.
Oh, that's neat.
In Paris, and it's a museum of natural history, but it's beautiful.
That's great.
If you like science, I mean, you could spend all day there.
The app, and everybody should download it because it's free, is Stuck on Earth, but also get 1,000 cameras in one. That's a nice
app. Only 100 cameras in one.
It's only 100?
Yeah.
Are you going to do 1,000 someday?
That would be crazy. Good God, man.
Trey Ratcliffe is at stuckatcustoms.com. That's his website. Andy Nakko is also here from the Chicago Times and from macworld.com, the Mac Data himself, creator of the Mac 911 column, Mr. Chris Breen, and the hair and body of Breen are here today. You have to maintain that bouffant, don't you? Now?
No, I don't. I mean, and that's the sickening thing about it is that
it just is.
It just does this.
It just is.
No, it's because I have such an oddly shaped head.
He tweets.
I end up with this hair.
He tweets as Hair of Breen, just in case anybody wants to.
No, Body of Breen.
Body of Breen.
Hair of Breen is somebody else.
Somebody else is Hair of Breen? I thought that was you.
No.
So somebody did Hair of Breen, and in response, you said,
exactly.
I have to do Body of Breen.
Yeah, because somebody said, oh, you're really funny on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter.
That's not me, baby.
Yeah.
That's my hair talking. Right. All right. We're going to talk some more about Mountain Lion, and I'm very excited about, apparently the rumors are confirmed about the Retina display and March 7th, and I don't know. These are confirming rumors about the rumors that are confirming the rumors. And what the hell is the A5X? We'll find out in a moment, but first, a word from Hover.com. I am a bad, bad man. I still have... I tell people all the time, I moved all my sites to hover.com, and that's true, except that some got locked because I was on that other guy that doesn't want you to move, and I just threw up my hands in dismay, and I still haven't gotten back to it. I was so, I should have used Hover's concierge service, then I wouldn't have had the same issue. Go to macbreak.hover.com. What am I talking about? Not that, apparently. Oh, they don't have macbreak.hover.com. anymore, I guess. All right.
Okay.
Well, hover.com is great.
Oh, you know why? I know why. It was HTTPS. Let me do it again. Mac break. You will vouch for it?
We use it. We love it. We use it for all our domains. I can't believe we used to use these other messy sites before.
Horrible messy sites.
In fact, it's insulting, these other sites, how they try these upsells.
Yeah,
and
it. It's 50 clicks before you can buy anything.
It's infuriating. And it's confusing. I consider myself sort of a master internet user, and I'm able to avoid all these upsells.
Right.
Right. But it gets confusing. Oh, just, Hover is clean. It's
you don't
elegant.
Know what you bought. Really,
it's an Apple-esque experience on Hover.
Yeah.
It's
That's
great.
A good way to put it.
Yeah.
One of the things that almost always you do want, at least I always want, and that I do check in the upsells, if you can see, is domain anonymity, right, where it doesn't go back to your home address. That's built in. It's automatic at Hover.com. They don't even charge you extra for it. So the stuff you want is here. Hover is domain name registration and management made simple, and it did work. I had HTTPS. It's macbreak.hover.com. That's the place to go. You know, pick a domain name. Let's say Stuck in Customs. I wonder if anybody has stuckincustoms.com, so I'm going to search for it. Now, of course, somebody does have it, the fabulous Trey Ratcliffe, but what it'll do, it'll suggest some alternatives, some of which are currently owned, by the way. But they will have stars next to them. See, like stuckintime.com, somebody's got. I can get stuckincustoms.me. You might want to pick that up real quick.
Yeah. Just get on that, Curtis.
It's only $10. Curtis, that was a mistake. You have, look, there's quite a few, actually. Info, biz, C-A-C-C, dashes. Nobody wants dashes. But look, some of this stuff is on sale, and that's what's kind of interesting. So somebody has stuckintime. They call this a premium domain. What they've done is to eliminate that thing where you call up and you say, hey, I'm Trey Ratcliffe of stuckincustoms.com. I'd like to buy your domain. That'll be $1 million. This is an anonymous thing. They've set the price ahead of time. They call this premium domains. They also have a clunker trade-in policy. So if you're buying a new domain and you have domain names, I do this too. We all do this. We register domain names we might want. I have, for instance, tunictime.com.
Really?
Yes.
For what reason?
At one point, Jennifer made me register. We were actually at dinner. She said, I'm going to do a tunic business where I sell custom tunics. Uh-huh. This business did not, needless to say, happen. However, I was able to register it on my phone on Hover, and that was one of the reasons I love Hover, because I didn't need all those clicks. And now here's the beautiful part. That is now officially a clunker domain name. Hover, when I buy a replacement, will refund me everything I've spent at Hover.com, including the registration and the renewal fees. I can trade in my clunker domain and get my money back. I love that. If you want a non-premium domain name, use the offer code MacBreak, and you'll get 10% off. And by the way, renewals or transfers, I should say, are really great. They have a concierge service. Just tell them when you call this number here at the top of the screen. And by the way, when you call during business hours, they promise not ever to put you on hold. I don't know if you ever called those other guys, but that's kind of a way of life. They put you on hold and they transfer you to, you know, the upsell specialist and all that. Not Hover. Once you get somebody, that person will hold on until the job is done. Call them, say, hey, I heard Leo say you'll transfer my domains for free, and they will. They'll give you that concierge domain service, normally $25, free, all of your domains. They just move them over, and here's the beauty part. You only pay $10 for domains you're transferring, and that gives you an additional year automatically. So it's quite a good deal. If you've got domains you want to move over, I highly recommend it. Just go to macbreak.hover.com. If you're buying a new domain, make sure you get the 10% off by using the offer code MacBreak. Did you hear about it on Twitter?
I heard about it from you.
Okay.
And I thought, what is this thing? Because, you know.
You probably register quite a few domains.
We do.
Yeah.
I won't go through them all, but we have a lot of domains.
Yeah. As do I.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, part of it's, you know, proactive. Part of it's just for fun.
Yeah.
It's like owning domains, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun to go there and look at your list, you know?
Manage them.
Yeah.
MacBreak.hover.com. Nice people. It's it's the Two Cows folks, Elliot Noss and his crew.
They're, so you say you're giving up tunic time, huh?
Do you want it?
How much?
Yeah. Wait, let me set a price. I hear Chris Breen might be in the market.
Yes, he's into Ren Fairs and stuff.
I have a ton of them. I should sign into my account. I'm actually embarrassed to show you the domains I have. I'm not going to do it. It's silly. But, you know, I think geeks do that. Where every time I'm talking to Dick DiBartolo on the Weekly Daily Gizwiz, he registers a note. He actually has a domain that's something like Merry Christmas from Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest Writer. com.
That was available?
That was available. Look, I have all these game on things. I've got my kids' names. I've got Inside Twit. I've got leolaporte.tv. Well, I didn't even know I had that. .us. I should. See, I can't get leolaporte.com, but maybe I should use leolaporte.us. RK8T.tv. See, we thought maybe we'd name the show Arcade. Get it? But see, nobody gets it. Shut up and play.tv.
Yeah, I have about six of these that after like a couple of cocktails, you think, this would be a great name.
Like a and good before idea you know at the time.
Right, you're drunk registering.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you've got these wonderful names.
There it is, tunictime.com, in case you want it. Hmm. I've got my call signs. I have 18 domain names so far, just today. And you see, I always register for like, I've got tunictime through 2022. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 2012. Thank God.
Oh, it's coming up
soon. That will expire soon, so you could just put a little watch on that one.
All right, I will.
I did my kids' names through 2020 because I knew they didn't want them right now, but I figured at some point they might, you know, want them.
You want to pass them along.
So I'm passing them along. I registered the domains. Did you do that with your kids?
No, but my kids, actually, I worry about the whole naming thing of kids nowadays.
You can't,
you know?
You cannot name somebody unless you check Google first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And luckily, make sure that it's unique.
Ratcliffe is sort of a unique name, and our kids have kind of unique names. But, you know, like I should have given them IP addresses or
right.
something.
For 128.0.3.4 Ratcliffe. That's a good idea.
Yeah, kind of like a Beinard might do it.
Just going to confuse people if he ever moves.
Will it be IPv6,
you want indirect reference.
There you go. That's why, exactly right, Andy.
The middle one, the one with the head.
They have great domain management too, but I don't want to get into that because we'll move on. But hover.com, thank you. So, did we cover everything we want to cover? iCloud, messages, reminders. I like notes because now, finally, I could do a note on the iPhone and it actually goes somewhere.
Well, it used to go somewhere. It still does, but it goes into mail. Which is the last place on earth you'd look for it.
And now, there are no more stickies. But you can take a note and thumbtack it to the desktop.
Well, I believe Stickies is still there.
Oh, I thought they were replacing Stickies.
I think Stickies is still there.
There's still Stickies? I was misinformed.
Still Stickies is stuck.
Stickies is stuck. But does Stickies sync with notes?
Stickies doesn't sync with anything.
Stinkies is stinky. Notification Center. Now, the guy who wrote Growl says, that's okay. It's a little growly.
Yeah. I think that's generally what people say when Apple is just eating your lunch. And the first thing they say is,
okay.
That's okay.
That's okay.
There are a lot of Windows machines out there. That's okay.
We're pleased that Apple has endorsed our product's concept by incorporating it into their own.
We didn't invent wooden bookshelves. Share sheets, we talked about that. Oh, I didn't mention Twitter everywhere. Now, so this is interesting. Twitter and Vimeo, but not Google and YouTube, not Facebook. Now, I've seen some say, oh, I can't wait till Facebook is there. Will there ever be that kind of integration? Twitter is integrated. You can tweet from any app, right?
Yeah, it's part of the sharing infrastructure. It's a system. And not only is it a system-wide resource, but it's also single authentication. So if there is any other app that wants to give you access to Twitter, you don't have to separately authenticate and sign in. It'll just simply use the existing credentials that you've already established. So that is a pretty damn strong endorsement from Apple for Twitter.
It's actually kind of just in time for Twitter because I think Twitter is starting to look a little bit like a commodity, like it's a back end information system.
It's a server for links.
Right. Yeah. And so I think this is very good for Twitter, not so good for FaceTime and Google Plus. I would love to see Google Plus and Facebook integrated.
Yeah. Well, it's Google Plus doesn't integrate with hardly anything.
They don't have an API.
Yeah,
that's part of the problem.
They don't have an API yet. And
they need API.
They were struggling with that because they're trying to figure out do we just want this automatic updates coming all the time?
Hey, Google, stop struggling because that's stop it. Yeah. Get to work.
Well, it's also a hell of a balance changer because I I'm looking it up right now, but the notes on the amount of traffic that Apple sent Twitter's way simply by integrating with iOS is
huge.
Just profound.
Huge. Yeah.
It's by a factor of two or three or four. Yeah. And the endorsement of Vimeo has always been sort of the boutique video host service, the one that gives some advantages to presentation advantages, organizational advantages, and no stupid pop-up ads that have to be dismissed before someone can start looking at the actual video. But if Vimeo becomes the default way of people from macOS sharing everything, and if that actually even starts to extend to iOS in the future, Vimeo, the Vimeo CEO just upgraded from the rowboat to the cabin cruiser, I think.
No, I think you're absolutely... And, I prefer Vimeo. I would love to see a competitor for YouTube. You kind of have to use YouTube right now, even though it is a little down market feeling, because that's where everybody is. But I hate the comments, and I hate the fact that they pull half of our videos down because they, because of claimed copyright infringement and things.
As a matter of fact, I just posted my first video in about a month yesterday. And hated what YouTube did to it so much that I'm like, you know what? I haven't used Vimeo in a while. I'm going to post it on Vimeo, and I'm going to include that as the link because I hate the fact that there's a caption. The video starts with a caption to establish where we are, and that immediately gets covered up with an ad for God's sake. There was some sort of high blood pressure medication, and I'm looking at every word in the description that says, what about model engineering and steam engines suggest that people with prostate problems are going to be interested in this video?
I agree.
I don't know if it's the highlight of Golden Girls clips and like Matlock. I get that. Okay, that's fine. Jay Leno. Okay, got it. You want to go above the prostate medication into. Have you considered what your relatives and loved ones will be left behind with if you when you pass away? But
Trey, do you ever use Vimeo at all?
Yeah, a lot of artists use Vimeo.
I love it. It's gorgeous.
But
people like Vince LaForêt, when he posted the first 5D Mark II videos, he didn't post them to YouTube. That would have been crazy. He put them on Vimeo.
Yeah, I think he went with Smug Mug, too, for the video.
That's right. Actually, you're right, because they did an uncompressed or little compressed
But record. Actually, I disagree with Andy a little bit on YouTube, because I think the same thing's going to happen that did with eBay, right? Notice there's not like four auction companies. There's only one eBay. And the reason is because if you have something to sell, you're going to go to where most people are buying. And if you have something to buy, you're going to go to the place where most people are selling. So it all, snowballs into one major site. Same thing's going to happen with video. If you have a video that you want people to see, you're going to put it on the website where most people are. If you want to watch video, you're going to go to the site that has the most videos on it. So,
that's why we use YouTube. I don't want to use YouTube, but that's where it is.
But you can turn off those ads if you want to, if you're not that. And, unless you get to 50 or 100,000 views, it's not worth putting ads on there anyway.
Right.
It's just pennies. So keep it clean until you get something that's a hit, and then you could throw on some videos.
Colin,
some
what ads. Did we make? We made $34, I think. We had a video with, I think, 50,000 views, $34. It's like, okay. Thanks.
But it certainly ties into what Apple thinks that people are going to be using the video service for, not for publishing a video that's going to be seen by 80,000 people, but something that's going to quick sharing of, hey, look, my dog has a cantaloupe rind on his head. He looks kind of like Spaceman Spiff. Yay. If they were, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Apple would never delete it from iMovie. They would never delete YouTube support from Final Cut. Yeah, exactly.
OS level integration could be a big kick in the butt for Vimeo, and it certainly will make me rethink, my process.
It certainly makes Vimeo more valuable. If they're looking for, again, they've been off of the margins, I think, for quite a while. They've been sort of like the secret underground video host site. But if now they can establish themselves a year after Mountain Lion that, this is where ordinary regular consumers come to share personal videos of their own lives, that's something that they can then market really effectively to advertisers. And within 2 years, we can ruin Vimeo and turn it into exactly everything we hate about YouTube.
It's really clear.
Circle of life.
It's very clear that Steve Jobs, if you read the Isaacson book, just was so pissed off at Google. And it's not a surprise that Google has been somewhat deprecated in all of Apple's subsequent products. Is this a permanent ban? And by the way, FaceTime, they tried to put FaceTime in iTunes with Ping. Mm-hmm. And then we don't know what happened, but it's pretty clear that there was some disconnect because they demonstrated it with Ping. And then Ping wasn't there.
Yeah, they seem to have had some spat with Facebook.
Yeah.
And but I do think that now that Steve's gone and Tim is in there, he's starting to talk openly about we're going to start doing things a little differently without, you know, saying we're going to abandon the legacy that is Apple and everything that Steve wanted us to do. I do think maybe we're going to get a little more cooperative tone out of Apple than we've seen in the past.
Because from the user point of view, I want it all. I don't want just Twitter and Vimeo. I want to share everywhere. You know, I want some way to do that. And if it's integrated in the OS, that's fantastic. I mm-hmm. love that. I love how it was integrated into iMovie, and I'd love to see more of that. And frankly, I hate to admit it, but I use Facebook more than anything else, and I really think Facebook integration is kind of is a big deal. That's what real people use, right?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I don't, but everybody else in the world does.
Exactly.
Hey, I abandoned Facebook a year ago. Remember, I deleted my account and everything, and I came back, and I'm frankly more happy there.
Okay, because I followed suit. I left as well, and I haven't come back.
I led you over the hill. And
you
then,
did.
And
you
then
took
then
me
said,
over the hill and
see
said,
ya.
See ya, sucker. And whoa, what happened here?
How is it over there, Chris?
Lonely. Very, very lonely.
It's such an interesting wrinkle, isn't it? I mean, everybody in our group, and I'm not just talking about like journalists and commentators, but everybody at a certain level of geekness, we don't use Facebook. We hit not only that, but we act. We're one of those people who says, "And let me tell you why I don't use Facebook." Either either they'll talk about the privacy problems, or they'll be like on my side of the fence. Was I just think it's a stupid service that doesn't work for anything I want to do it for? But meanwhile, just today, I was looking at my Facebook notifications, and yep, so my sister's friend just tagged me in a photo that got paid. Okay, so this is where the humans hang out. I want to learn more about the humans so that I can exploit them commercially. I should probably be.
It's exactly right. It's where the humans are.
A baffling species. I'd be surprised if they last another 300 years.
You have to say that more like Spock. A baffling species. There was one other thing. I've forgotten what it was I was going to mention in Mountain Lion. And we covered Mountain Lion in great detail, obsessive detail, as is
appropriate. I thought it was kind of interesting how they made an entire section of both of the presentation about, well, here's what we're doing to make it localized for China now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
Where not only do they have new text input for macOS that exploits. I had no idea that was so difficult to integrate pictograms into a Roman text. Not only is it a case of when you want to enter a pictogram, you spell it using a Roman keyboard phonetically the way it's pronounced.
Right.
And because people will pronounce different symbols different ways, this has to be a very dynamic resource.
That's
so that if the word comes out that no, they're using it with like sort of a hard O instead of a soft O, okay. So now we've got to cover the use of the letter O, use the letter OU, and all that kind of junk. And then the flip side of that is the idea that we realize that the Chinese government likes to censor pretty much everything. And so when you translate, wherever you see the word Vimeo and YouTube, please substitute these local alternatives. Instead of Twitter, please substitute this word that we're now supporting. All these localized services that are homegrown and know how to integrate themselves into the great firewall of China's censorship system. So I just thought it was significant that was not – usually internationalization is they'll sort of group everything together and say, well, here's what we're doing to make it more broad for a worldwide audience. No, this was like as big a banner part of the story as was sharing sheets, almost as was AirPlay.
Yeah, who is that aimed at? It's probably aimed at the shareholders. I mean –
China's a bigger and bigger and bigger market.
Huge market.
And not only that, but it's a very peculiar market where there's so many basic things that are just, you can just put a college student on the problem for about 2 weeks to Frenchify the Mac operating system. But China, you almost have to create a brand new version of the product to deal with all the idiosyncrasies of Mac.
These are all things you add to share sheets, you know, as Youku and Todo or video sharing sites and a Weibo, which is a blogging. I mean, these are all have to be, you know, this is non-trivial. You're right. It's not just localizing. the language is changing it all. All right, let's talk about the iPad.
Confirmed.
Rumor confirmed. some sites, I think Mac Rumor is saying, yes, we've confirmed it. It's a Retina display. But did Apple confirm it?
No,
just
no.
Checking. Okay.
No, it's a dumpster confirmed it.
I have to say that Kara Swisher from All Things D was on Twit on Sunday, and she was – I have never seen her more adamant. No, it is March 7th. She's very confident. John Pachowski there has good resources, apparently, and she's very confident it's March 7th. You agree?
I agree. There have been enough of the people that you can count on that Apple has told directly are saying March 7th.
Yeah. Nobody's gotten invitations yet. Now, Andy, you will get, I'm sure, an invitation, and we will cover this March 7th, and Andy will be there. Wherever they are,
I will
maybe.
Be there. It's not an entitlement. I'm not counting on being invited, but I feel as though if there is a list of people they're considering inviting to this event, that I would indeed
would be on
that
list.
I believe myself to be on that list of people they would consider inviting.
It is confirmed I am not on that list. Trey, do you ever go to Apple events? Have you ever been invited? You would be a logical person to invite.
Well, we do develop a lot of apps, but we've never been to those things because you get almost all the information you need off the web. Yeah. And have you seen this new developer guide they released?
It is really interesting for iOS.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the nitty gritty, but it is a beautiful guide for people who have never developed for iOS.
Well, in fact, if you look at like steps 6 and 7 in there, they start to get into computer science-y type stuff and design patterns. And
That's true.
It's a very robust thing. Android hasn't done all that
yet. Let me see if I can find this.
Let me tell you something while you're looking. Apple made one hell of a great hire last year. They hired away the head of all of Pearson Education's whole Mac tech book division, the guy who was responsible for all of those really great iOS and macOS development books that Pearson published over the past couple of years. And so now he is essentially reinventing developer publications for Apple. He has his own hires, people he brought in himself. I haven't spoken to him about this particular document, but I would not be shocked if this was this is the first thing that came out under his guidelines, under his regime, under his tutelage. Fantastic guy. I don't want to mention him by name because I haven't talked to him about mentioning him by name on the show. But I've worked with him in a couple of books. Fantastic to work with one step or the other. The sort of guy who not only helps you do your best work, but helps you to see ways you can improve your best work. So
that's neat. That's great. There is something similar, I think, for Android. They have some pretty good docs, but it's clear that you have to make it. There's a little bit of a sell involved in getting developers. Shouldn't have to sell iOS, but
Android is tough.
Have you looked? I notice you're carrying a Google Nexus, Galaxy Nexus.
Yeah, I do like this. I do like this Galaxy Nexus, and I love my iPad too. But yeah, we also make Android apps, but it is harder. Honest to God, it is harder. And but I find here's one of the secrets I figured out by accident is that if you make a really good iOS app, big companies will come to you and offer to pay you to convert it to like so. Samsung, I did something with us where they pay.
Sure, they want it on their phones. You bet.
But they're dumb. Oh, I shouldn't say that. Well, okay,
it's a rote conversion. No, well,
it only goes into the Samsung store like exclusively for 6 months. And so I don't know why Samsung is making their own Android store. It's absurd. Come on. It should be one ring to rule them all.
Yeah, same reason Amazon makes their own app store. They're selling hardware.
Yes.
And it's an exclusive to the hardware. Although actually the Amazon app store could be on every phone.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'm not so worried about the Amazon store. The Samsung store and these other.
I don't like it because it fragments it. So now I have two stores to update through and then Samsung adds a third. And I don't like it either. But
Google fragmented themselves. I mean, I really think that these companies felt that they're put into a position where in order to build apps that take advantage of the features of their phones that stay on the message that they're creating, the general scrum of the Android marketplace is no good for that sort of thing. That Samsung wants to have its own police force and its own concierges and its own editors that make sure that the apps, their app store experience serves all of their products and all of their users. So, I mean, just I have a couple of interesting Android devices in the house now that arrived a couple of days ago that I'm like, okay, now let's find something that takes advantage of these cool features. Oh, nope. That's not only is it a problem of finding apps that take advantage of those specific features, it's so difficult now to get the actual app that I actually want to see because there's so much ghosting going on. About I spelled this app with a lowercase h instead of an uppercase h, which means I'm getting this Russian clone that is only good for the first two screens, and then after that it stops working and just simply takes my credit card number.
Right.
So I really think that the proliferation of alternative app stores points to a failure on Google's part to take the rocks out of their own field.
All right, back to the iPad. Retina display.
Confirmed. I'm glad that on the show we're finally talking about the iPad. Nothing but Mac
all the time. Look at that. Confirmed. iPad 3 has 2048 by 1536 Retina display. You know, it's as confirmed as you can get until March 7th, right? Yeah.
Well, they got a ruler, though. Come on.
They got a ruler.
I mean, come on. That's science. Right there. It was a cool story.
I think that they probably are regretting the word confirmed because right. That's not the way that most this word confirmed. I don't think it means what you think it means. their story is we have a device that is the exact same dimensions as an iPad, the exact same size as an iPad screen. It is exactly twice the pixel density of an iPad screen, unless some other developer of a tablet is ordering billions and billions and billions of these for a brand new device we haven't even heard theorized yet. We believe this to be the screen of the iPad 3.
Yeah, but what about this? The picture of the A5. Wow. My iPad just broke. How convenient.
Confirmed.
I need a new iPad. Shattered. March 7th.
It's a self-ejecting iPad.
Can I come soon enough?
Attenborough.
Sensing danger. The iPad 2 leaps into the bush. The weak and lame iPad 1 is left for the snow leopard to consume at its leisure.
This is the picture claims to be the logic board of an iPad 3. We do know that the A5 chip is the current chip in the iPad 2, an A5X as opposed to A6. We don't know what that means, though. Does that mean it's quad core? I would guess. Here's what I'm going to guess. It's still dual core. I don't see a real advantage of quad core, but a much upgraded GPU. How about that?
Yeah, no, I think it's good. And I think really so many people are walking into these stories stating the obvious.
Right.
Right. But whenever there's an upgrade to this, it's going to be faster.
Right.
It's going to have a better camera. It's going to have maybe more storage.
Couldn't have a worse camera. I can tell you that right now.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. No, I could.
It might have a better camera.
No, I think it is because it gives people something to write about.
Right.
Because they take all the obvious things that it absolutely must have and then say, well, yes, confirmed. And it's got this. And what is with that picture? I mean, do they.
It's from a Chinese. Let me back up a little bit to
Mac
Rumors.
Don't they have cameras in China that.
It's a forum post at the Chinese site WiPhone. It's not obviously photoshopped, and there are some things. If you zoom in, the part number here is one step above the part number in the current iPad. It's not. I mean, it could be photoshopped. It could be fake, but it's not fake.
My only difficulty is that I find it hard for me to convince myself that this is useful information of any kind.
Okay,
you know that it's more like okay, there is a part. That may or may not be genuine. Looks pretty good, but it may or may not be genuine. It may or may not be going into a new iPad. We're going to find out for a fact where all the specs are. It's just that all this information 2 weeks to 2 months before the release of this device is of no use to anybody. It's cool. It's trivia. It is news, but again, what are you going to do with this information?
Right. Do we want to talk about, I don't want to talk about, but I'll mention it. Google circumventing the iOS Safari's third-party cookie protection.
This is what I think.
What a bunch of jerks.
Let me tell you. I'm serious. The conversation starts with what a bunch of jerks. Yeah. We don't know how high up this decision came, but the fact that this actually went into a live code says, oh, man.
I disagree.
That's humiliatingly bad.
I disagree. But anyway, go ahead.
This is the way I kind of look at Facebook and at Google. It's like they're in a prison cell. And during the day, they've got this poster of Farrah Fawcett on the wall. And then at night, they peel that back. And with a spoon, they're digging away at the wall that is our privacy. And then every so often, a senator comes by with the billy club and kind of goes da-da-da-da-da-da across the bars, and at which point they're back in the bunk and the poster's back in place. The senator leaves, and then they're back again with the spoon. Just
But really, did they interfere with your privacy? All they did was put code in there that allowed them to put a plus one button, which wouldn't mean anything unless you were logged into Google at the time.
Yeah, but I think so much of this
they already know you're logged into Google.
But so much of it is about the spirit of this, which they ignore. Yes. And what they do is they look at their contract or they look at whatever the specs are. They say, well, technically, we didn't do anything wrong because we're not collecting your personal data. We're just doing this. But if you look at the spirit of it, which is basically, would you please get out of my business? And I think both Facebook and Google do whatever they can to get in your business.
To me, it's even simpler than that. It is, I really just want to shake them by the throat and say, this is not a freaking game. If there is a user setting that says, I desire this level of privacy, and you do something to specifically circumvent that setting, you are a bunch of jerks. Just like if I have specifically, I can specifically tell any advertiser, I do not respond to pop-up advertising on websites. I hate it. I never use it. I just don't like it at all. I have voted and indicated that preference by installing software that defeats these things. If you then put in code that tries to get around that, saying, "Oh well, I bet that he would respond to my ad," that's because he hasn't been targeted effectively. Or, as I really believe is the case with some of these decisions, that I really believe there's a sense of arrogance in which they're saying, "Screw him. That's not his decision. If we can get this cookie installed, we will install this cookie. How dare he do something to stop us from our God-given moral right to collect as much information as we can? This will fix his wagon. Screw Andy Anatko. Screw Chris Breen. Screw all those users. We are entitled to every piece of information we can get."
I would buy that.
That's what gets me really, really upset.
I would buy that if Apple had, I mean, this was a default setting to block third-party cookies. Apple says sites allow cookies only from sites you have visited. That is the default setting. Apple does say something about it on the desktop, but does not say anything about it on iOS. So it really wasn't, no iPhone user necessarily has chosen that. Apple's chosen that for them.
Well, by the same token, they've also not chosen to upload to Google every photo that I have on my hard drive.
Yeah, yeah,
they've
no,
also
I understand.
Not chosen. Okay, I mean,
but this I think, is the but setting. I think it's not so clear because
in
I think
in a could sense, in a sense, well, I really do think it's clear. Anytime you make that conscious decision as a developer that says, "Here is a protection against this thing that I'm trying to do. I'm going to exploit a bug or a weakness to get around that protection." You suddenly you're not a criminal, but now you've taken one step more into the direction towards being a criminal.
What and about the contention? Here's my contention. I believe Apple set that not to protect my privacy. I believe Apple set that to protect iAds. What they would like to do is say, hey, nobody can have any information about our customers except us. And so as a result, they are very careful to, quote, protect my privacy, except when it comes to iAds. Apple's not interested in privacy. They're interested in market protection. And Google didn't even do this in such a way to impose on my privacy, merely to put a plus one button on ads on sites that somebody who has signed into Google has already said, I want a plus one button, in effect. So what Google's doing is saying to Apple, hey, no, in fact, our customers are telling us they want to be signed into Google. They want a plus one button, and you're blocking it as market protection, not as privacy. How about that argument?
Okay, well, turn your iPhone over. What logo is there? It's not a Google logo. It's an Apple logo.
Well, that's why I don't use an iPhone, Andy, but I don't think that Apple is on the side of the angels here. I think that's a mistake to assume.
Okay, well, I'm not going to speculate as to the reasons why that the default settings for the Safari browser are the way they are. It's possible that what you say is correct, that this is a long-range strategic sort of thing where they don't want competition from the iAds. It's possible, though, that they are truly saying, what would the user want in this situation? Would they want a stronger browser that protects their privacy, or would they want a weaker browser that protects our privacy? We can't speculate.
Or would they want a browser that breaks Google? See, I think Apple wants to break Google.
It breaks all the boats in the harbor. They all sink at the same rate. But it really is a philosophical thing. It's like if there is a locked door, I really think you have to. You can get through that lock because, oh, geez, it's actually like a 4-pin lock. I got a paperclip with me. I can easily get past that. But there is a principle that says that this person locked this door for a reason. It's not the door. He didn't do it to bar me from getting access to things I have a right to. It's not as though here's a public bathroom that everyone's supposed to use and he locked it so that he could have it for himself. This is a private door with a private lock. As soon as you try to open that lock without anybody's permission or without anybody's knowledge, you have taken a step away from the angels and towards the pointy pitchfork sort of guy.
And I agree. We cannot know Apple's intention here, so I'm not going to impute Apple's intention. But they did not – the choice to lock the door was in fact not the user's choice. It was Apple's choice. And Apple did not publicize it. So
okay, well, let's let me put it this way.
If I go to a site where I expect a plus one button because I'm logged on to Google and I don't get it, I may not know why I'm not getting the plus one button. I may not know enough to go in there and change that setting. Maybe I want that button.
I want to put it this way. Let's say that a developer releases an app that decides, well, the default setting for Gatekeeper on Mountain Lion is to not allow apps that have not been signed. I'm not sure the user really wants that, so I'm going to exploit this loophole to allow this piece of code to install and execute, even though it hasn't been signed by everybody. Are you still?
That's end around. I agree. No, I agree. Okay. So and I think you can make a case that Google is malicious here. I'm not sure it's as. I bring up this alternative point of view to point out that it's not 100% clear.
I think that if Google's, now this is my prejudices. If I believe that if this nameless company who is due to this workaround, this end run against Safari security features, if they were really on the side of the angels, what they would do is be able to sense, oh, why can't I set this cookie? Oh, let's do an ID check. Oh, it's a Safari browser. We'll just throw up a little notice that says, oh, by the way, we would like to enable this, but we can't because your security settings are
set. That might be the right thing to do. I agree.
Right. Yeah. That would be, I believe that my prejudice is that I believe that someone whose instincts are to do no harm would choose that option. Not
there must be a way we can get around this somehow.
That would be a good way to do that, actually. And I do wish Google had done that.
Does Facebook go around it with a like button also?
Yeah, they're also semi tracking people that haven't whether you signed it or not.
It would break the like button.
Yeah.
So anytime in order for this whole issue of third party cookies. By the way, we talk about third party cookies a lot on Security Now. I have the same debate with Steve, which is it doesn't bother me. Third party cookies in general and third party cookies in particular don't bother me. I like it that there's a setting so that if it bothers somebody, they can turn it off. It is somewhat how the web works, however. It is how ads are served. It is how the web pays for itself. Facebook, for example, is a free service that monetizes with things like the like button. Now, I acknowledge that I think when you explain what the like button does to people, they go, what the hell? You mean every site I go to with a like button, Facebook knows I was there, whether I'm logged in or not? That upsets people. But in fact, if you get the full story, which is, look, you're getting a free service. They're monetizing. Google's monetizing by advertising. Their goal is not to say, I want to tell somebody what Leo Laporte's up to, but in fact to get ads served to you that are of more interest to you than just generic ads. I think that my point is that is a larger argument. I agree with you, Andy. It would be great, and I hope that we're moving to a future where you are notified about all this stuff. But then we've got the problem where you have notification fatigue,
right?
Which we once have seen before on Windows with UAC on Vista, where people just start, yeah. So
I guess I do agree with you that there does need to be a way so that people who run commercial sites can get paid for the content that they create that actually does cost money. It's not just some dude in his apartment sometimes. It really is journalism that costs money. I mean, I have to fly to these places to cover these events. I guess the definitive change would be I'm thinking about Ghostery, for instance, which is that really great cookie blocker. Mm-hmm. That's a plugin. It's one thing to not ask before you can deposit cookies. It's another thing to simply say, oh, there's Ghostery involved. Ghostery has been installed. That's why I can't install it. But that's okay. I know a way around Ghostery. I think that if someone has installed Ghostery,
you're right.
They've really made their
preferences clear. That's a clear signal.
Right.
So I don't think there's such a clear signal from iOS because it was default and Apple did not make a big deal saying, hey, by the way, we are disabling third-party cookies on your behalf. If they had said that, then there'd be no argument. And if Google had said, hey, by the way, we can't put a plus button on here because Apple has disabled third-party cookies. Would you like to re-enable this? Then there would be no argument. The problem is neither side is really explaining their point of view here. And for good reason, because nobody wants to hear it. It's like more detail than most people want, right?
Right. And what they do is they give you a very broad setting, which is private browsing. So right. You can flip that on, and then you're pretty well set. But, then that disables everything. So when you return to your favorite website, you go, I have to log in again because there's no cookie there.
Steve keeps telling me to put no script or script no on my various browsers. I turn it on for one day, and I go, this is a pain in the ass, and I turn it right off. You know, the truth is JavaScript is a problem. And if Apple really wants to protect privacy, what they should do is turn off JavaScript just as they turned off Flash in Safari. Then we'd all be safe, but no sites would work.
That's it.
So I think that this is important, this conversation. I don't want to defend Google because I agree with you, Andy. It's sleazy to do something behind people's back. But at the same time, it's not 100% black and white here.
Well, and it just shows that it's difficult, both from their end and our end as well. That how do we configure privacy in such a way that we don't feel like somebody's messing with our business, but the web functions for us?
We get a lot of free stuff. I think people, there's a certain amount of entitlement
that
users get where, hey, well, I want my free stuff, but I don't want to give you anything for it.
Right.
And it doesn't quite work that way. Yeah. It's more complicated.
It's all gray.
Life is gray. Unless you're a big cat. Then it's pretty straightforward. Come to me, Trey. Come to me. Look deep into my eyes. Trey, we haven't talked lately. Trey. All right, we're going to take... Actually, well, we don't need to take a break. Let's get to our tip tool and the number or whatever it is we do on this show. What is it?
Picks of the week.
Picks of the week, iOS tips, cougar tips... Normally Alex Lindsay gives us an iOS tip. Is there anything that you think, I know one, go into Safari on iOS and take a look at your browser settings.
Take a look at those darn browser settings. Yeah,
There's
an option in there for private browsing and you can...
It's more than private browsing. It says there's three settings. You can have no cookies.
Right.
Now, see, if Apple had set no cookies, it would break the web in significant ways. It would be on the side of privacy, sure, but they don't dare do that. So they've set it to be three settings. There's no cookies, all cookies, and only cookies from sites you've visited. That's, in a sense, no third-party cookies.
Right, so you got never from visited,
right,
always.
Or always, right.
But honestly, I just turn on private browsing.
So there is a setting on private browsing. And if you turn that on, what happens? No cookies at all?
No cookies at all. You leave no traces. This is the kind of thing that should you be visiting...
The porn setting.
No. You're a foreign agent.
Oh,
rather,
sorry.
And somebody picks up your iPad and sees that you are logged into the CIA's website. With private browsing on, you quit out of Safari, and then when they come back in, it's not going to jump up there or automatically log into one of these sites.
So this is in the settings on iOS and under Safari, not under
Safari,
general settings.
Right.
And it is privacy. Turn that on. Would you like to close your existing tabs? Yes, close everything. I want to start over. Private. By the way, interestingly, it does not turn off cookies. It just turns off third-party cookies.
Uh-huh. What I want are an iPad and a laptop that's made out of cellulose so that I can actually, at the end of the day, just light one match. It all goes off in about 2 seconds. I start again the next day. I have a big roll of like paper towels, tear off a new computer, start again with no tracks, whatever.
Lion, or you could do a mountain lion or cougar tip, Andy Anatko.
I will do a quick, greatest hits style macOS tip. Sometimes I go deep catalog. this is a tip that I used a couple weeks ago, and someone was surprised to know that macOS could do this. It's been doing this for quite a while. If you go into the sharing tab of system preferences, there is actually the ability to share your internet connection. So that I use this all the time, like if I'm in a hotel and there's like wired internet, I can simply plug in the Ethernet into my MacBook, turn on wireless internet sharing through my Wi-Fi port, and now I have a Wi-Fi access point that I can use with my iPhone and my iPad. So that saves me from having multiple connections going. Also, in a hotel situation, it can actually result in faster access because the network gives one address to your MacBook, and then your MacBook distributes more sub-addresses to your sub-devices. Instead of each one of these devices, even if there is in-room Wi-Fi, having to connect the hotel server and see if their address is available, see if their servers are clogged, stuff like that. So it's a very, very easy way to share internet connections with other places. It's one of the reasons why I still have yet to get to activate tethering mode on my iPhone yet. because it seems like every single circumstance in which I would want to have a network connection to a random device, I can actually serve it right from a different device just by simply sharing the connection. Very simple. One click does the job.
Excellent. Let's see here. How about our picks of the weekend? I'm going to start with you, Trey Ratcliffe. You can actually put it right where that is, and people will be able to see what you're showing us.
So I have two tips. One is hardware that's expensive, and one is software.
Let's spend some money.
So
in the Alex position,
this one has been exactly kind of life changing. I've dumped all my Drobos. I had four Drobos, and now I use this Thunderbolt Pegasus drive.
Oh, are using a Thunderbolt drive.
In fact, I have two of them. They were not given to me. I paid full money for these things, even though I probably should have been given them.
Now that plugging it like that, you should get them free.
So I bought,
this is from Promise.
Yeah, from the Promise Pegasus. I bought two of the 12 terabyte drives, and it connects via Thunderbolt, and you can get as many as you want.
Are you doing the RAID version?
Yeah, the RAID version. And it is so fast. It is as fast as my internal SSD.
As it should be.
Yeah.
As an SSD.
It feels like it. Now, I know there's regular old hard drives in there, but...
But because they're RAID 6'd, perhaps.
Yeah, it's so fast. And I run my Lightroom library off of there. Because you couldn't run your Lightroom library. You couldn't actually use your Drobos as like working drives that you pull files off of.
You know why? USB.
It was too slow. It just chugged. Even the FireWire was slow.
Yeah.
But these 12 terabyte drives, they are amazing.
They ought to be at that price.
Well, yeah, they're pricey. Now, you don't have to go for the full 12 terabyte drive.
Jesus Louise.
But man, they are great.
So the 6 drive with terabyte, populated with terabytes, is $17.99. So if I take out $600 for the drives themselves, about right, that's a $12.99 for the case at the Apple Store.
Yeah, it's a great, great product. And then here's my much less expensive pick. This is this new to-do list.
I do want this, by the way. But I just,
man, it's great.
I'm just saying, I want those. They're just expensive.
Yeah. So this is called Clear.
Yes.
Okay. And it's a very simple to-do list.
Now, you're on an iPad, but this is an iPhone-only app.
Yeah, so I got the little 2X.
But it looks pretty nice. I mean, it scales just
I guess we'll have this 2X on the new iPad, too, right?
Yeah, we'll have 4X now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So anyway, it's very simple, elegant, nice little sound effects and everything. And it's got this touch interface.
Here, let's plug in.
Right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's plug this in so we can hear the sound effects. Okay. You have a hole that I can put this in?
And we have a show title.
All right, so here we go. Moving on.
Are we hearing it? I don't think we're hearing it.
That's can you hear it?
I don't know
if we
hear
it or not. So you go into your personal list.
No. I think it's because you have a rubber on. It's better if the hole doesn't have the rubber.
And we have a show title.
Okay. Let's just take off your
I don't know where
sheet.
You've been,
there we
Leo.
Go.
I don't know.
I'm just calling it like I see it. There.
Didn't you go overseas during the war?
Yeah, what is this? Do you have a do you have a like a plastic on your...
No,
that's just glass.
Yeah, just glass.
Oh, okay, I don't feel it. It's not okay.
Okay,
it's a little lack of sensation.
All right. So anyway,
so
let's
sorry.
Say you
For
might
the children in the audience. please ask your parents what Leo's talking about.
You can have multiple lists, like a personal list, a work list. You go into it. If you want to create something new, you can pinch and pull it apart, and this thing unfolds.
Isn't that cool?
Nico, blah, blah, blah,
this
blah,
is
blah.
Philip Ryu, who does all that amazing tap stuff. He's a very good.
Once you're done with it,
program.
You just knock it off. It's got pretty little sound effects. Yeah. Simple, elegant, Apple-esque.
It's a buck.
It's
99 cent.
Yeah, it's a couple bucks.
You know, I love it. I use, you know, unfortunately, I'm using like this most elaborate to-do list that has integration with the, you know, the cloud.
I have that too. OmniFocus.
OmniFocus is great. I actually use something called Astrid, which is both Android and iOS, and it knows where I am. So when I walk in here, it says, oh, don't forget you were supposed to do this and all that stuff. And I wish it had an interface like Clear. That's just gorgeous. Yeah. It's just beautiful. Really nicely done. How about you, Mr. Breen? I see you have something there, a little cool.
I brought a toy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more than a toy. This is Apogee's mic.
It's actually a mind blower.
It's kind of a mind blower, yeah. It's a $200 mic, and it works not only with your Macintosh or your Windows machine, but it also comes with a cable that will plug directly into your iPad 2
or into your 4 or 4S. It's a 41 or a 48 kilohertz supports that, and 24-bit audio.
It's, I didn't know that. So if that. Do you have to use special software to do that?
No, it just works.
It just works.
Yeah.
Is and it's a condenser in there.
It's a condenser mic
it's a
in
side,
there.
It's side-loaded, so you're talking to the, right. that part, right?
Right.
I found it popped a lot, but other than that, if you don't talk right into it, it's fine.
Yeah, well, you've got a gain switch on the back. So
I
you,
love that.
Yeah, you want it or on the side. You just have to have it far enough away, and it really produces some terrific sound.
I was very impressed. We did a review on Before You Buy, and I was blown away by the quality.
Yeah, I really like what they've done with this thing, and it's... And I like the versatility of it in that you can use it with both a Mac and with an iOS device. So
right.
I think that's it's a terrific little device. So, again, not cheap at $200.
You know, a good mic's going to set you back at least that much.
Yeah,
I think.
It will. So, and really portable. So you just throw it in your bag. If you're doing podcasting, if you're doing field recording, particularly with an iPhone, this makes a really nice setup.
I used this, we reviewed it on Before You Buy, and I used this to record a little audio boo that's on my website. Should I play it just so mm-hmm. you can hear the...
Sure.
This is me pumping up my ball. Can you give me some audio from my... Hear how clear that is?
That sound is actually the pumping.
Oh, yeah, I heard the plus of it.
This actually, the quality, I was blown away. And that mic is not real close to... it's got very clear...
Testing a new microphone. From Apogee,
I would say it sounds as good as our Heil PR40s. I think. IPad. Don't tell Bob Heil I said
that. USB mic with a 30-pin connector. So
there it is. I agree with you. $200, and that's from Apogee. There's another one I want to review that Chris Marquardt had, which was the square little mic or something like little square mic LSM.
Mm.
And I want to try that as well. But it's similar form factor. You know, I've been looking for a long time for a good mic to use with my iPhone. And this is it. This
yeah.
is amazing.
Yeah, well, and Apogee has the kind of relationship with Apple where they can design devices that will work with a dock connector. And right. not every manufacturer does. Some of them have to go in a different way.
Right.
Or you have to use a USB hub.
Well, and I'm thinking they don't have analog out of that 30-pin anymore. So that's digital coming.
That's all digital.
Into the mic.
Right.
Or into the iPhone from
yeah,
the
yeah.
mic. Yeah. We should mention, I forgot to mention this, that not only is it Philip Ryu, but it's Real Mac that did that clear... A program, and they've been around for a long time. They do Rapid Weaver and other development tools for the Macintosh. So it's kind of interesting to see them.
It's great. It's sort of app poetry.
It is.
In a way, because
it's
the
beautiful.
Removal of feature, the deletion of right. what could be is yeah. what makes poetry. And
yeah.
this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
I'm in the middle of doing what I hope to be a comprehensive roundup of keyboard solutions for the iPad. And so I've got like the office just full of pretty much every sort of keyboard you can get for the iPad. And so I find that there's no way to crown a winner. This is the best keyboard you can possibly have for the iPad. It's more like there are like the categories in the competition. And so I've pretty much ready to crown a victor in one specific category, and that is I want a very comfortable to type keyboard, but I don't want to carry something that's bigger than an actual iPad. And so I found one that I really, really like. This is the Zag Folio 2 for the iPad. What I like about it is that on the negative side, it is of course a smaller size keyboard. It's only about the width. It has to be only the width of the iPad. And as a matter of fact, I tried Zag's keyboards last year and really just intensely didn't like them because it really became a case of, so I really can't type with any speed whatsoever on it. I can't touch type on it. Why is this better than the virtual keyboard anyway? But they certainly really went and upgraded this. And I think that what it made me realize that the thing that I was reacting to was not really the size of the keyboard, but the quality of the switches. And for these switches in the Zag Folio, they're actually using scissor type switches that are the same basic types of technology that you find on a MacBook keyboard or on Apple's wireless keyboard. So you're still dealing with a size that's a smaller keyboard, but your fingers basically have that exact same sort of touch sensation for it. And although I find that I can't type at maximum speed with it, I can type quite comfortably with it. I just have to slow down a little bit to accommodate the smaller acreage. And it's also, it's a very smart little keyboard. It has integrated magnets, so if you close it up, it automatically goes to sleep. It's available in several fashion colors. It's not crazy, stupid, expensive. It's about $99. And when you compare it to the Apple Wireless keyboard costing $70, that's certainly credible. It connects simply via Bluetooth, and you can actually remove this keyboard from the case itself so that if you want to put some distance between the keyboard and the screen, you can do that. And the other final feature that's very nice is that it really is quite flexible because we're sort of used to dealing typing on keyboards like this, you know, in sort of portrait mode. But because it's not locked into a single frame, you can also actually use it as a simple page format like that. I'm holding it with one hand so that if this were on a table, this would be much more stable. Yeah. As it is, I'm very careful. I'm very afraid of dumping this on the tile floor, so I'm being a little bit careful with it. So in that, it's a rechargeable Bluetooth keyboard, so you're going to have to recharge it if your output is like mine, you'll have to recharge it every 3 days. But for normal people, it'll last several months. Very nice. Again, not the king of every single category, but if that really is your priority, if you want something that will be as compact as a netbook, but still have type as fast as humanly possible on a keyboard of this size, I do like the Zagfolio. $99. It's been discounted maybe 5 or 10% here and there, but good stuff for me.
I'm surprised you didn't pick pink, though. I think the pink really would be more suitable.
Pink? Oh, well, yes. Well, you know, there are types of my private life that I don't choose to share. I mean,
they've got they also have it in leather, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not like Trey. I can't just be one of these people who just gives and gives and gives of himself. There's a softer side of Andy that I only expose to a few people.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I gotta say, out of context, this is definitely hands down the sexiest Weekly.
If you just tuned
15
in,
minutes we've had. Wow, this is almost like an episode of Are You Being Served?
It's because we're all on toxoplasmosis right now.
Exactly.
And Trey, you're doing a crazy thing. You're doing a Google. Do you do Google Hangouts like your whole life is a Google Hangout? Because he's doing a Google Hangout right now.
A lot. they're all fans, so they all get to participate.
How did you select them?
There's this great plugin.
They all have facial hair.
You got to see this plugin. It's called
That's
My
why
Hangouts.
Fans. Oh yeah.
Have you ever heard of the My Hangouts plugin?
No.
So yeah, watch this. This is so cool. If you click here,
okay. Well,
I don't know if anyone can see my screen.
Nobody can see what you're doing. So just describe it.
So
Hangouts. I'll choose the My Hangouts extension here, and
it's written by a guy that's in this Hangout named Mohammed Mansour.
Great, I know Mohammed. Sure, yeah.
And so this shows you all the Hangouts that are currently happening all over the world. It's so
cool.
Oh, cool. And so you can just scan through there, look for something interesting, and just jump in and hang out. There's also a map view, which you can see right there.
Yeah.
And so you can see different Hangouts of people all over the world. And these are just very kind of laid-back things. And everyone's welcoming, and they're fun, and no pressure. And it's also nothing like chat roulette.
No penises?
No.
Is there a penis button?
No, there's not. But there's no need, because the thing is with Google Plus is everyone kind of uses their real name.
Right, so you can't really...
And, that's a one-way ticket.
That works nicely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's nice. I'm going to... you have to use it on Chrome, of course, not Safari. But,
it's a Chrome thing.
Yeah. Hey, we want to thank you all for being here. Andy Inako is at the Chicago Sun-Times. You can read his full review of Mountain Lion there. Thank you. Thank you. Golf clap. Also, CWOB.com. That's his website. Thanks so much for being here, Andy. And it's confirmed, March 7th, you might be here.
It's confirmed there's a possibility that I might be there. They got access to a part of a lightweight golf shirt that would be inappropriate for wearing in New England on March 7th. Mm. On the basis of this, they have confirmed that Andy Inako plans to be there.
And who else would be there? Well, of course, the folks from Mac World Magazine, including the Mac Daddy himself, Andy Inako. No, Chris Breen. There it is.
Yeah.
Chris Breen, the body of Breen, not the hair.
Not the hair, just the body.
It's so good to have you. Thanks for making the trek up here. We appreciate it.
I am thrilled to be here, finally.
Love having you here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Chris. And Trey Ratcliffe, who is not done, he's going to stick around to do Twit Photo with us. Trey is at StockinCustoms.com. Don't forget 100 Cameras in One, which is his great app. On the iPhone and the iPad, and of course, the full version, stuck on Earth, stuck here on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Costumes. stuckincustoms.com. I don't know what that's wrong. Stuckincustoms.com is a place to go. Don't forget, Trey has a great HDR tutorial. If you're a photographer, you must have. It's wonderful. Thank you all for joining us. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. But you know what? If you miss an episode, don't worry. We make audio and video versions available for download from all the better podcast downloading places. And, of course, on our own website at twit.tv. What day of the week is March 7th? That's a Wednesday, isn't it?
It is Wednesday.
Yeah, of course it is. So maybe in a couple of weeks we'll be doing the show on a Wednesday. I don't know. Just for that week only. Who knows? Only the shadow. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.